go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to this Monday edition of Head On, the only live programming for today on the network, right here on the horn. And it is, of course, a shortened week. It's Thanksgiving week. Here in the hills and hollers of West Virginia, it's also the first day of rifle season for deer hunters. And it wasn't the best of deer hunting weather today. We've had a steady rain falling, sort of one of those soaking mists with heavy cloud cover and fog in the hollers all day long. But the hunt will continue. And days like this have their own beauty. We tend to define a beautiful day by something with the sun high in the sky and nary a cloud in sight. But this day has its own beauty, too. This day, these sorts of days have their own, dare I say, purpose and their own aesthetic pleasures. I was driving back. I went and picked up the fam-damily turkey today, and it will be a minor miracle if he is completely thawed by Thursday. My God, I don't know where a frozen turkey falls on the Mohs scale of hardness, but I think it's got to be pretty high. I think if you could develop either strong enough to wield a regular sized turkey or a really miniaturized turkey, you could probably, you know, hand it to one of those guys with the loop and the dink and split diamonds with it. Damn, they're hard when they're frozen. And coming back down the mountain, I just looked off at the vista before me with all those tendrils of fog rising up from the hollers, intermingling with wood smoke from wood-fired heaters and so forth, and was struck by the genuine beauty of it. No, the far horizon wasn't pink or purple with the fading of the sun. The sun would go down and the only difference being that the day would go from gray to dark of night. But it set me to thinking, because this is indeed a holiday week. And I guess when you get right down to it, I'm pretty fond of Thanksgiving. Because it means getting to go and play in the kitchen and feed a bunch of people who will hopefully enjoy the meal. It means thinking back and remembering probably more on Thanksgiving than on Christmas or any other holiday. Remembering the family with which at one point in time I was surrounded and am now surrounded by my own, and what we all hopefully mean to each other. And I got to thinking of our little horn family, too. And I hope that you will share your plans for the Thanksgiving holiday coming. Share it by email. Share it in the chat room. Share it via phone. Be part of the conversation. And not the typical trite, you know, what are you thankful for? But more importantly, just in terms of in a holiday that seems to be freighted with a certain amount of introspection, what do you think about? What do you think about during Thanksgiving? And, of course, on Wednesday evening, the last night before the Thanksgiving holiday, we will persist in a family tradition, yours and ours here. We will have we will close the program on Wednesday evening with the obligatory playing of Alice's Restaurant, a song that I heard as a kid and never thought would be relevant again, and yet it is. And, of course, I think we'll also add in Truman Capote's short story that I've taken a habit of reading every year. And there will also be the telling of our own little Thanksgiving tale, The Night Mommy Almost Got Arrested. And that'll take up a good bit of Wednesday. But there will still be plenty of room for conversation as well as talking about the news. But throughout these next couple of, I'm sorry if this seems like I'm sort of laying down on the job. I am sincerely apologetic, but I won't be here Friday because my beloved Mountaineers are playing detested Pitt on Friday evening. And I will be hoping against hope that we can keep our BCS hopes alive, although that requires hapless Syracuse beating Cincinnati, and it wouldn't hurt if Hawaii would go ahead and do the same as well. But we must beat Pitt. And, you know, if you haven't... This is one of those rivalry games where if you haven't won a game all season, if you can just beat Pitt, it has a little bit more of a glow on it. That was the situation Pitt was in last year when they ruined the Mountaineers' national championship hopes. Although I'm firmly convinced that Rich Rodriguez had a hand in throwing that game because he wanted to go to Michigan. Michigan, yes. Hail to the victors. Or this season, not so much. Rich Rodriguez, the multi-million-dollar man, has provided the Wolverines with the single most humiliating football season they have had in 129 years. And, you know, that's one of those moments when you look up and you go, well, you know, hey, Rich, karma sucks. So there's that. So I'm going to be watching the Pitt game. And, of course, Saturday for the sports fans, I believe Saturday is the Iron Bowl, is it not? Alabama and Auburn. Auburn in that unenviable position of thinking, you know, if we can just win this game, and you know, Alabama-Auburn, it's deadly in earnest. And really, if Auburn wins this game, the Iron Bowl, all will, in fact, be forgiven. Well, almost all. But beating the University of Alabama and their $4 million coach Nick Saban, would be perhaps the biggest Alabama Auburn the biggest Auburn win in the series, which goes back to the late 30s, early 40s, in terms of uninterrupted play. So no, there won't be any show on Friday. We'll play. We'll go into repeat mode on Thursday and go through, and we'll be back on Monday. So there's that. And even though I know she doesn't listen to the program, a birthday greeting goes out to my beloved sister, who was as big a part of my my young life as any other person was. And this is her birthday, and I hope she has had a happy one. Okay, so the business part, all the loose ends are tied off now, I think. We've got 2 days of rock-solid conversation coming, and some on Wednesday as well. And where to start this evening? Where indeed? Well, I'll tell you where I'm inclined to start. I got this after the program ended on Friday, and so this is the first chance I've had to bring it to your attention. But I'll be darned, and please understand, I'm all better now. I was fit to be tied. I mean, I was just one pissed off mess when I read this earlier. You know, the Vatican has a newspaper called L'Osservatore Romano. And they also have their own radio station. And, well, you know, you can say this is a good thing, or you can find it utterly deplorable, like me. The Roman Catholic Church has decided to forgive John Lennon. And on the one hand, you say, might say, well, hey, you know, they're doing forgiveness. And, you know, at least as my buddy the librarian said, hey, it didn't take them near as long to get around to forgiving John as it did for them to get around to forgiving Galileo. They never contemplated actually torturing and killing John. All of which is true. But, you know, back in the mid to late 60s, John Lennon declared, the Beatles are more popular than Jesus? Nah, I don't do a very good John Lennon, you'll have to forgive me. And especially here in the United States, and especially in the American South, rednecks, morons, jackanapeses, dead from the neck ups, piled up all our Beatle records and burn them. Burn them. John Lennon done said they was bigger than Jesus. Did you hear that, Marvelline? A disgusting display of ignorance. It was self-deprecatory, but not that it needs defending. But, yes, in the year 2008, as the old year winds down, the Roman Catholic Church, through its mouthpiece, L'Osservatore Romano, didn't Father Guido Sarducci work for them? Have declared that it can now be written off, John Lennon's comment, as the, quote, bragging of a young man wrestling with unexpected success. A quick memo to the editor of L'Osservatore Romano. Kiss my ass. John Lennon, through his public persona, advocated for an end to torture and killing and death. He did that a lot more than the Vatican can have claimed to have done at the same period in time. John Lennon did more with his short life than just about any pope in recent memory has done with his. You know, I look forward to the day because I catch myself usually as far as pronouns are concerned, and I'll say his or her. Of course, you can't do that. You can't really do that with the popes. But I look forward to the day when you can, than any pope has done with his or her life. So, you know, a great big meh to the Vatican for thinking that John Lennon even needed any forgiving, or that they were in any position to do any forgiving that he needed. Piss off, ye generation of vipers. Yeah, I had an email exchange when this story first came out, when it was first brought to my attention, and wrote back and said, oh, really? They've gotten around to forgiving John Lennon? How nice. Excommunicating Hitler? Not so much.
excommunicating Mussolini? Haven't gotten around to it yet. That's right. It's the official policy position of the Vatican that Adolf Hitler and Benito Mussolini, well, they were good Catholics when they died. And if and one of the things that, as I've noted in the past, that really lit up the conservative hierarchy of the church was a call by the man who would later become John Paul I, a call for the excommunication of Adolf Hitler. And it lit up a furor. The papacy didn't want to, they still don't want to, ain't a gonna excommunicate Adolf Hitler or Benito Mussolini. You know, I guess I don't have a dog in the hunt, but the fact is both men were consecrated, baptized, whatever, all the you know, signs and symbols and rituals and everything. The Roman Catholic. I mean, if it was the Southern Baptists that were refusing to do it, I'd be on the Southern Baptists. But it's not. It's not the Presbyterians, and it's not the Lutherans, and it's not the Episcopals, or the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, or the Cult of the Possum Goddess. It's the Roman Catholic Church, who apparently has those hep cats at Vatican Radio just now got around to listening to the White Album. No kidding. And they said that the White Album demonstrates how creative the Beatles were compared with what it called the, quote, standardized, stereotypical songs being produced today. Well, Vatican Radio has obviously never heard the Drive-By Truckers, Will Kimbrough, Rodney Crowell. They've never heard any, no. Sorry. Mm-mm. They've never heard, oh, I don't know, Gangsta Grass. There's a lot of stuff that Vatican Radio, you know, but if they're sitting there thinking, well, hell, of course, you know, the Beatles' White Album, sure, it stands up against Do Me Baby One More Time, or Oops, I Did It Again, or anything by Celine Dion. Easy. But what I found charming out of this whole thing was that before they could talk about how good, looking back in retrospect, how good the White Album was, before they could do that, they had to forgive John Lennon first. God, can't you hear the conversation? Your Holiness, we'd like to do a retrospective of the White Album. We like the White Album a whole lot. It's held up a real good after these 40 years. This is a Guido Sarducci sketch. It really is. Ah, but is that not the Beatle who said he was that the Beatles were bigger than Jesus Christ? Huh? Well, yes, Your Holiness, he said that. Then you may not say anything about the White Album until I have forgiven him. There, it is done. I have forgiven John Lennon. Now is the time in the Vatican when we dance. Too much. Just way too much. So, you know, that's a starting place. Really. So, the Vatican is basically saying that while the Beatles were not bigger than Jesus Christ, they are better than any music that's been done since. And, wow. Just wow. I mean, the White Album was never exactly my favorite. Yours? I mean, it just,
I mean, there's some great stuff there. But, no, it didn't just jump all over me. Then again, when you've got a song like Happiness is a Warm Gun and Why Don't We Do It in the Road and Everyone's Got Something to Hide Except Me and My Monkey. Leave him on the minky. Oh, poor Benny the Rat. It's an interesting album. So let's take one track, a George Harrison track, from that White Album. What do you say? Yeah, let's.
I take two.
Okay.
Okay. Now, granted, they're a great big honking bunch of filthy hypocrites, but I got to give it to Vatican Radio. That's pretty doggone good stuff.
Yeah. I mean, how can you not hit the how can you not sit there and listen to it, just to have your feet tapping? And, you know, revolution. And again, you know, maybe that's a little bit like Alice's Restaurant, a song that we didn't think would be relevant anymore, and suddenly we find it is. Just kind of like, let's see, other songs that we thought had gone away, but turns out are still relevant or have renewed relevance. I'm thinking in particular, I got a story Faith sent it along today about a potato farm in Colorado that opened up its fields after they'd done their harvest just with free potatoes, and they had over 5,000 people come and descend on their potato farms like locusts and just nothing left. And in the exchange that we had, I said, you know, there's people still, even in the most Twinkie darkened night, folks recognize that they would like to have, you know, fresh, good food. And right now we are a country that is in need of all the free food we can get, because after all, we turned so much of our doggone farmland into McMansions in the last several years. It was, I guess, 2004, 2003, when the data came out that for the first time in over 50 years, the United States no longer produced the majority of its own food. And I kept, you know, doing the whole running around with the hair on fire thing, going, hey, people! And yeah, liberals, progressives, decent human beings, Democrats, they get it. Not so much with the God Squad and the Repig-Lickin' Party. Why not let the peons in some other country farm that food? We'll just ship it up here on a big old freighter boat full of diesel fuel. Well, what the heck? What's wrong with shipping grapes on a boat from Chile to Los Angeles and putting them on a truck and driving them all the way to West Virginia? What the heck's wrong with that? That sounds like a daggum economic 21st century miracle to me. But yeah, free potatoes? I mean, potatoes are relatively cheap, aren't they? I mean, they're potatoes. And yet 5,000 people came out, little kids and grandmas and everything in between, filling their bags with these nice Yukon Golds and these, what were they, Kennebec Reds or whatever? No, Kennebecs aren't red, are they? I can't remember. Anyway, but Yukon Gold was one of them, and I love Yukon Golds. But they filled their bags with these things when they could have gone to the grocery store and actually probably used less fuel to buy commercialized potatoes, but they wanted them fresh. They wanted them, in a word, real. And there's every possibility that some people had some fuel in the car, but no money in their pockets. And free potatoes become a real, real boon when that happens. And along the lines of music that has new or renewed relevance, I couldn't help thinking of this.
One evening as the sun went down and the jungle fire was burning, down the track came a hobo hiking, and he said, "Boys, I'm not turning. I'm headed for a land that's far away beside the crystal fountains. So come with me, we'll go and see the big rock candy mountains. In the big rock candy mountains, there's a land that's fair and bright, where the handouts grow on bushes, and you sleep out every night. Where the boxcars all are empty, and the sun shines every day. On the birds and the bees and the cigarette trees, the lemonade springs where the bluebird sings in the big rock candy mountains. in the big rock candy mountains. All the cops have wooden legs, and the bulldogs all have rubber teeth, and the hens lay soft boiled eggs. The farmer's trees are full of fruit, and the barns are full of hay. Oh, I'm bound to go where there ain't no snow, where the rain don't fall, the wind don't blow, in the big rock candy mountains. In the big rock candy mountains, you never change your socks, and the little streams of alcohol come a-trickling down the rocks. The brakemen have to tip their hats, and the railroad bulls are blind. There's a lake of stew and a whiskey, too. You can paddle all around them in a big canoe in the big rock candy mountains. In the big rock candy mountains, the jails are made of tin, and you can walk right out again as soon as you are in. There ain't no short-handled shovels, no axes, saws, or picks. I'm a-going to stay where you sleep all day, where they hung the Turk that invented work in the big rock candy mountains. I'll see you all this coming fall in the big rock candy mountains.
And the meaning is, of course, obvious as to where that came from. The jungle, the hobo jungle, Hoovervilles. That's where 8 years have gotten, 8 years of Bush administration policies have gotten us. And I don't think there's any guarantee that we're not headed in that direction again. I saw a great editorial cartoon by Horsey. I think it was over at Bart Cobb. And of course, I'm convinced that there's no proof. It's mere speculation. I think Horsey must be one of those cartoonists who was inspired by the great drawing of some of the folks at Mad Magazine, Sergio Argani's, Don Martin, that crowd. And it's a mom and a dad. And some little naked children sitting around a fire, and dad roasting some sort of a weenie over the open fire, sitting on the open door of an SUV on blocks. And I forget what the caption was exactly, but the piece was titled, the cartoon was titled, America 2018. And the cartoon, like I said, I love his cartooning. It's high quality and particularly funny in a sad and tragic sort of way. Yeah, there was. It was at bartcop.com. You can see it today. Yes, kids, 10 years ago we were freaked out if a politician, America, 2018. If a politician didn't wear a flag lapel pin and fearful of swarthy strangers boarding airplanes. Nobody was worrying about the country's $48 trillion debt. Two little naked wild children. Was that back when people lived in houses? Yeah. Hard to ignore. Hard to ignore what we're facing. And, of course, along those lines, Barack Obama introduced his financial team today. This Geithner fellow will be Secretary of the Treasury. He was the father of the Bear Stearns bailout. Obama said today, my commitment is to do what is required. President Bush has indicated that he has the same approach, the same attitude. That's the Jedi mind trick of Obama Wan Kenobi. Because we know that George Bush's attitude is to steal what little is left worth grabbing on the way out. The economic team... New York Federal Reserve President Tim Geithner, Treasury Secretary, and this is a little disturbing, former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers as chief of the National Economic Council. And all I can do, like you, is take a wait-and-see attitude. Christina Romer will be the chair of the President's Council of Economic Advisors. She's an econ professor from the University of Cal Berkeley. And it remains to be seen if these guys, these folks, the Democrats are talking about a $700 billion stimulus package. I just hope it does. I hope that I trust these people to have more brains than any given Republican. I really do. Even if you've got real issues with somebody like Larry Summers. On a comparative continuum, there's got to be more brains there than there is with somebody like old Hank Paulson. Remember, Dim Leader had we thought he was kind of cronyish. Snow, was his name Snow? The first Treasury Secretary in the Bush administration? And he saw what the hell was going on and got out. See you later, George. Hear my dog's mom calling me. And it was from there on, it was cronies all the way out. So you got to hope. If you do nothing else, you have to hope that there is more substance to these appointments than and you got to have a little, faith that there's something more to these people in terms of substance than there was to the crony crooks of the Bush administration. And all we can do is wait and see. Unless you're crazier than a sprayed roach like the New York Times' Thomas Friedman. Thomas Friedman has decided to chime in and is calling for Thanksgiving to, I guess he's just being a smartass, but calling for the Obama inauguration to be bumped up to Thanksgiving. Yeah, no kidding, really. Now, this is the guy who thought Iraq was just going to be rosy and wonderful, and the inventor of the Friedman Unit, we'll get it done in six more months, turning corners and all that.
It's not just a big moment for him, Fried. It's a huge moment for America and the global economy. I think we should seriously consider moving up the inauguration day, because I don't know that we have 2 months to have a political vacuum at this moment in this economic crisis. I mean, to Neil's point, the financial system is the heart. It pumps blood to the industrial muscles of the economy. It's not working. We're supposed to sit around now for 2 months and wait for the new administration to get in, because this administration is kind of checked out. They're not going to do anything big. And so...
Huh? Oh. Yeah. Well, no, Tom, see, that's what drives me crazy about these horses' rear ends, like Thomas Friedman. They're not going to do anything big? Dang. Stealing every last cent we have in the Treasury wasn't something big, Tom? Breaking us on the rack or on the wheel of a dummied up, phonied up, ginned up, rubed up, faked up, conned up war and occupation of Iraq and Afghanistan wasn't big? Oh, well, they're not going to do anything big between now and then. Okie doke. Got it. But you see, there's a little bit of a problem. If you inaugurate Obama tomorrow, it might, well, granted, or Thanksgiving, Friday after, that might, it might provide some some merciful respite for the country in terms of getting the thugs out of office. But are we not entitled? Is Obama not entitled? I mean, to pull stuff together and have a plan for the 100 days. I mean, he's made certain promises about things that will be done and introduced in the first 100 days. But, you know, ready on day one meant January 21st. Yeah, I guess he's being facetious. But, you know, I'm so sick of these supercilious, the holier-than-thou profession, you know, the punditocracy, if you will, these for-profit-only media gas bags that they just about make me gag now.
I don't think people fully have grasped the fact. I tell you, Fried, you know, I go into restaurants now and I look around. To your point earlier, Cameron, I want to come up to people and say, you shouldn't be here.
What was that about elitism a few months back? Yeah, people don't need to be in restaurants because, you know, after all, people who wait tables and bus tables and who prepare meals and tend bar, well, they need to just go broke. They need to be out of a job, and all the restaurants need to shut down. Because, see, we're stupid. We're not really super-duper smart people like Thomas Unit Friedman. You don't need to be here. Don't you understand? There's a problem. Well, Tom, you want to go into restaurants and say that? Where are you eating, buddy? Just asking.
You should be home having tuna sandwiches. What are you doing here? Don't you understand?
Oh! One of the things that has stayed with me a very, very long time is something said by those elderly folks who were elderly when I was tiny, and whose words I wish I remember many more of than the ones I do, but one stuck. Talking about the election of 1928, the Republicans promised us 3 meals a day, and they came through. Oatmeal, skip a meal, and miss a meal. You need to be home eating tuna! Well, we'll save for another day, perhaps, the discussion about the overfishing of tuna and the depletion of the tuna schools and available tuna in the world's oceans. Yeah, we'll save that for another day, maybe. Why didn't he just say, go home and eat your porridge? Or go home and eat your gruel, peasant? I can't help reading or watching, reading of and listening to someone like Thomas Friedman, who will not want for anything and has the nerve to tell us what we should be thinking about. And you know this is one of my favorite poems. I can't help thinking of this because of one particular line after that tuna fish comment. Whenever Richard Corey went downtown, we people on the pavement looked at him. He was a gentleman from sole to crown, clean-favored and imperially slim. Well, no one can say that Thomas Friedman's imperially slim. I think they had to get that little cashmere sweater he was wearing in this particular video. They had to get it on with, I don't know, some sort of weird stainless steel tong mechanism. And he was always quietly arrayed, and he was always human when he talked. Well, no, okay, maybe this reference is bad for me, because that none of that applies to Thomas Friedman. But he still fluttered pulses when he said good morning, and he glittered when he walked. He was rich, yes, richer than a king. Okay, there's that. And admirably schooled in every grace, I suppose Thomas Friedman does know how to use his shrimp fork. In fine, we thought he was everything to make us wish that we were in his place. And especially in light of the fact that we're all going to be eating tuna while The Friedman's still having his hummingbird tongue canapes. So on we worked and waited for the light and went without the meat and cursed the bread. And this is the happy ending part. And Richard Corey, one calm summer night, went home and put a bullet through his head. Maybe we ought to all just email Mr. Friedman that little poem. And cursed the bread. And cursed the bread. Well, might as well just finish this off. Let him finish getting his both feet all the way into his mouth.
There is a storm coming, okay, and it hasn't hit yet. And I believe the decisions made possibly in these next 2 months could determine the next 4 years. This administration could be over before it starts. Over in the sense that it will spend the next 4 years digging out of a hole that has been created right now that may be deeper and darker than anyone realizes.
Tom, is this a big moment?
You dirty, lying bastard. Right now is when the hole's being dug? What the heck happened in 2001 when we had a surplus and everybody giggled at Al Gore for saying lockbox? Didn't that when the hole digging started there, Friedman unit? Isn't it? There's a storm coming? You know, saying right now that there's a storm coming is like hanging on to a flagpole and being dressed out horizontally in 120-mile-an-hour winds, saying, you know, it could get a little rough. You know, I know, we know, this hole wasn't dug in the last couple of months. This hole was dug in places like Nasiriyah and Fallujah and Al-Anbar, and Nineveh, and Baghdad, and Kandahar, and Helmand, and Kabul. That's where this hole was dug. But since this paid idiot was behind all of that, he has to conveniently, you know, ignore it. God, why aren't you home eating tuna? I just love being lectured by my betters, don't you? Kind of makes me feel like we ought to be having potted meat for Thanksgiving or something. Of course, you know, being po folks, I'm sure that Thomas Friedman would be perfectly happy with that. Because after all, he is so much better than we are. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, happy new weekend, Bob.
Oh, happy Monday, Brother Albert.
Oh, I'll tell you what, you know. Yeah, you and I share in this fascination of loathing as well. I hate Friedman. I shouldn't say hate. Maybe that's too strong of a negative. I don't even have the words of what this guy makes me feel. I can actually respect Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and Bill O'Reilly to combined more than I can. I can't even stand this guy. I really just can't. The guy is a fetid pustule. He's horrid. He's just a horrid human being. I don't know if he's ever right. I don't know where he gets the gall to speak with any sort of authority on anything.
Well, not just that, Albert, but, you know, he'll do what he'll do as long as someone will empower him to do it. And that, what kind of morons do we have in the for-profit-only media that think this guy's some sort of smart person? Do you get my point?
No, yeah, that's the chasm of, you know, the reality. You know, that's the reality chasm between mainstream and then real reality. I mean, the mainstream is not in the reality. The mainstream tries to paint reality, and when everything is good and going, and everybody has, you know, those wonderfully just light and feathery hummingbird tongue. What do you call them? Yeah.
Hummingbird tongue canapes. Lark's vomit truffles.
Oh my goodness! It's just. You know, yeah. I mean, you know, people like this, they sit there and they try to paint this world. You know, when everything's going good and people have Big Macs flying into their bellies, you know, nobody pays attention to, you know, so they can just say all these kinds of crap, you know. And now when, you know, when the anode is touching the cathode and the arcs are flying, you know, they act like, you know, it is like, there's a couple of things, like there's just a lot of famous scenes in movies where the guy Smiley sitting there and blah 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 blah, we gotta get over here, you know, in terms of they're just standing there underneath the World Trade Center, and then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, it's kind of smoking, oh my god, we gotta get over here, and then and these people just sit there and. Like, they have no grasp in reality. These guys just sit there and they talk about, you know, what is he talking about? This storm has been coming for years. This is not something that's just like, oh.
Yeah, this ain't Bill Murray standing there saying, well, I don't think the hard stuff's going to come for quite some time.
this has been here. They're just so behind the curve. It's not even funny. It seems like as we go further and further, and as the years go on and on, they just get more and more out of sync. They're like out of tune. They're like a car with a broken timing belt. I mean, they're horrid at what they're supposed to be doing. I don't even know why that he would hold an audience with four other people sitting there looking at him, trying to say, you know, yeah, Tom, what do you have to think? Who gives a crap what you think, Tom? You're an idiot. You're constantly proven to be an idiot. You're six months.
Thomas Friedman reminds me of that great Latinate word, defenestration. As in, to defenestrate someone, to chuck someone out a window. Because, you know, that's the next time, you know, he's telling you, well, you know, they could be crippled for the next 4 years. You call security and have them just pick him up by the back belt loop, you know, and the shirt and the suit collar, and just walk and just frog march him right off the set. Because he's nuts.
Yeah, you got him. Yeah, no, you've got him total bullseye. I mean, yeah, I don't think I've ever heard anybody describe him as well as I've heard you kind of just totally just paint him. I mean, you've nailed all the numbers, and it's just, it's a spitting image. I mean, this guy is just, yeah, I heard that this morning, and it just, you know, it almost made me reach for my Lanta, because this guy is just, he's just disgusting. You know, I even heard him talking about, I mean, like, not only just to kind of even further it, and I'll just tell you a little quick thing. I was trying to take a shower. I had to go visit some family yesterday, and, you know, I got a shower once in a while. And I'm in the shower. When I'm in the shower, I like to listen to the radio. And they had that Dr. Zorba on Your Health. And this is akin to the kinds of things that Friedman says are the kind of things that Dr. Zorba likes to talk about. I don't know if anybody ever listens to this guy. Like, and the guy gives you medical advice. Like, seriously, get a second opinion, because the guy's an idiot. He's a literal idiot. I mean, he's a doctor. No, he's an idiot. All right, he might have some good, what's that crap you start eating? Tofu recipes? He might have stuff like that. But, like, I really wouldn't trust the guy to stick a finger up my butt, I'll tell you right now. Why are your hands on my shoulders? Anyway, I had to. I just had to.
Oh, Albert. Let's see. 54 minutes into the first. Yeah. I'll remember that one. Why are your hands on my shoulders?
Sorry. Couldn't help it. Anyway, Dr. Zorba.
This one may be a while going away. Okay, I'm going to try now. I'm going to try to get back to being professional.
What you said almost made me drop the soap. And so I can't
Don't
help it.
Do that!
No, but he's talking about, like, this is how clueless he is. Everybody knows, right? I think everybody knows. Everybody should know that hemp seed, right? Hemp seed is one of the most nature's complete foods. It's got all the protein that we need in the perfect balance of essential fatty acids for human consumption. And it's hemp. It's not cannabis. It is actually cannabis. It's a cousin. It just doesn't have the tetrahydrocannabinol. Okay. So he gets one of these calls, and he gives this guy the, well, I don't know, will it? Eating hemp food is certainly not going. I mean, you know, this guy's supposed to be a health doctor. You would think that, you know, he could talk about flaxseed oil. Well, hemp is better for you than flaxseed oil. How do you be a doctor and not know this? And it's the same akin kind
of
thing.
Well, I can actually answer that question from a story I had in the stack from last Friday.
Well, we got a little bit of lag sometimes on the show.
Well, but I really can. I can answer that question because the answer is, he wasn't paid to shill hemp seed.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. And you know, I back in the day when I did a lot more driving than I do now, you know, National Public Radio, National People's Radio, National Petroleum Radio, whatever, was my friend. And yep. I used to love listening to the nighttime programming, you know, whether it was This American Life or
that's still good.
Or The Infinite Mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they talk about that wonderfully geeky stuff that just, you know, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's public radio, so you can trust it, and there's no commercials for herbal baldness cures on it or anything like right-wing radio. And here are these utterly sane-sounding individuals, and one of them's this noted physician, I don't know. And talking about stuff relating to brains.
Mm-hmm.
And really, you know, I'm not trying to overstate the case, Albert, but I invested some credibility in this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out, according to the New York Times, that he was on the take.
Mm.
I wish I was kidding.
Well, didn't Bob Vila, that's how Bob Vila.
The Bob Vila thing. This particular guy was Dr. Frederick K. Goodwin. And he hosted The Infinite Mind, and it went on, you know, it was for years. And it was as a result of investigations run by, you know, and this is one of those moments. I still have a hard time forgiving Charles E. Grassley, Senator, for the miserable little toady lick spittle that he was during Iran-Contra. I just despised him during that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sitting there covering up for war criminal Ray Gun and Bush and, you know, North and the rest of the filthy fascist thug crowd. But lo and behold, you know, this is also the Senator Charles Grassley who has had the nerve, where Democrats in the majority have not, to go after right-wing fundamentalist religion industry types. You know, he's the one that's cranked up the heat on Creflo Dollar and Kenneth Copeland and Joyce Myers and, you know, those miserable thieves. Well, so he turned his steely Iowan gaze toward Dr. Frederick K. Goodwin. This guy's a former national because I'm a professional broadcaster. This guy's a former director of the National Institute of Mental Health. He's widely respected. And it turns out, however, that he's on the take. He's earned at least $1.3 million from 2000 to 2007, and I realize that's probably chump change compared to, say, some bloodthirsty monster from Blackwater. But he's earned at least $1.3 million from 2000 to 2007, doing marketing lectures for drug makers, and not mentioning the relationship to the folks at public radio or mentioning it on the program.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, this is September 20th of 2005. The New York Times, through Senator Grassley, uncovered that he did a broadcast where he warned that children with bipolar disorder who were left untreated could suffer brain damage. And that's not a point of view that is rock solid in the literature. On the program, however, he said, but as we'll be hearing, because, you know, you got to do the public radio voice, right? But as we'll be hearing today, modern treatments, mood stabilizers in particular, have been proven both safe and effective in bipolar children. And, of course, that was the same day that GlaxoSmithKline gave Dr. Goodwin $2,500 to give a hustle for its mood stabilizer drug, Lamictal, at the Ritz-Carlton Golf Resort in Naples, Florida. He got $329,000 over the course of that year for hustling Lamictal.
It's good work if you can get it, I guess.
Yeah, well, sure, but I mean, that you know, that really does go to the heart of your question. You know, why do these people say what they say? Because they've been paid to say it. Why are we so surprised that people in these for-profit only enterprises are only interested in profit?
Yeah, true.
I mean, the Flush Flembaugh, this guy, the Flembaugh, I haven't heard. I haven't been doing my homework. It's hard for me to sit and listen to that miserable creep. But I haven't heard what his take is on bailing out the big three. Because, you see, he was part of an undisclosed giveaway from either, I think it was GM. Yeah, because he was driving some the fancy schmancy Cadillac for a while. And so were, you know, and so were a lot of other people, you know, Imus and, you know, the whole crowd. Hey, you want a Cadillac to drive around? You know, just say nice things about it after, okay, guys? And it wasn't presented as an advertisement, but lo and behold, there's Flush Flembaugh on his problem. You know, I had the opportunity to drive a new Cadillac Humongo poop box, and I got to tell you, it's the finest poop box I've ever driven, my friends. It's how commercial broadcasting works, and just because you say it's NPR doesn't mean it ain't commercial.
True.
It's and in fact, in fact, it's a little bit more frustrating because they're not telling you outright to go buy this stuff. It's this program brought to you by a generous grant from the Really Big Humongous Bomb Making Corporation of America. When you need really big humongous bombs, think of the Really Big Humongous Bomb Making Corporation of America. Now on with Clowning Today.
Yeah.
I mean, at least what we do here, you know, we tell you. You know, this thing, this show is partially sponsored. All the horn programming is partially sponsored by Coal River Mountain Watch. And frankly, we wouldn't be here without them. In addition to that, you know, listener contributions, in addition to that, we've got we get a little bit of a price break on our connectivity deal because the fine folks at CityNet gave us a banner ad to run and we run an ad per show, and that's all up front because I'm lucky enough to have an intelligent audience that I can trust to make their own decisions about stuff like that. But this guy on public radio, I mean, he's an authority. He's an expert.
I just worry about it. It's not so much mine. I worry about everyone else. You know, I worry about everyone else that you know, the people, like, they get this artificial busybody syndrome, and, you know, they're running here, running there. Blah, 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 blah. I'm so busy. I mean, I got a really good friend who I haven't seen in years because she's so busy. She's always running, and always doing this, and always blah, blah, blah. And hey, you know, I mean, I can't control what people live their life. I mean, she's actually a little bit intelligent. She doesn't get like this, but. You know, sometimes, you know, when I sit there and I go to talk to her, she's, you know, like, you know, if I do get a chance to talk to her, it's, you know, she has no idea. Like, she only knows what she heard on Democracy Now. And, I mean, at least she listens to Democracy Now, which is, you know, funded by the CIA, you know, when you break it down. But, you know, we sit here and look at the kinds of media that we have, you know, feeding people's minds in terms of, you know, public discourse. We're screwed. I mean, that's what I get worried about. You know, you got people like Thomas Friedman. This is why people like Thomas Friedman are seen as these, like, you know, A-plus, ace of spades kind of guys that, you know, they know everything they say. I don't understand how. What did this guy ever do that was like, you know, that's the guy that invented sliced bread. That's the guy that figured out entropy and all that other stuff, right?
Okay, Albert, movie reference time. I sat and watched one with Agnes last night. There was much hee-hawing and laughing going on. No earth-shattering filmmaking. But we watched How to Lose Friends and Alienate People.
Okay.
And there's a line in it where the Polish landlady in New York City says, "In Poland, you are a celebrity if you had done something. Lech Wałęsa, John Paul. If you had done something, you were a celebrity." And, of course, it all swirls around these do-nothing celebrities within the film.
Mm-hmm.
And this is that. Thomas Friedman is a celebrity.
Fucking head.
Because of no particular reason except that some people in the for-profit-only media have decided that he will be. And, you know, that includes, you know, the people who invite him on the TV shows, whether it's CNN, Fox, NBC, CBS, ABC, whatever. But also the New York Times. You know, and extend it. You know, what is Maureen Dowd's claim to fame? If you read Bart Cop, the be all and end all on Maureen Dowd is as follows: she hates everybody. That's it. You don't have to do anything. And you know, I subject myself to the same scrutiny. I don't hold myself out as an expert because I ain't.
No, but that's why you don't get held under the same scrutiny. And in another way, you know, like, you know, Thomas Fried, Bob, you've been right. That's a difference. I mean, you've been correct about things. You know, and it should be one of those, it should be along the lines of, if you're wrong, okay, you know, everybody gets three strikes. But if you're really wrong, you know, like, everybody gets three strikes, but if you hit a weak pop fly to the catcher, you're out. I mean, and he just like, one more time. Oh, wait, let me self-pitch. And he keeps getting popping out to the catcher or popping out to first base. The guy sucks. He's horrid.
Okay, let's turn that analogy on its head. He's Bill Buckner. Sorry, Red Sox fans. The slow rollers go right through his legs. The stuff a T-baller could field and just take a step to first base and make the out. Thomas Friedman, weep. And, you know, let's be square, Albert. It ain't just Thomas Friedman.
No.
It's Thomas Friedman. It's Novak. It's all these babblicious idiots.
What's that guy's name? You know, I hear these guys. Did you see the McLaughlin Screamathon? Did you see... How about this one? Neil Cavuto. Did you see that?
Neil Cavuto screaming at Ben Stein. No, I did not watch it. I saw it and moved on. Because I just don't have the time in my life for that foolishness anymore.
No, you do. You do. They are panicking. It's like watching rats chew through each other to get out of the ship. It's bad. It's like, you just see it, you're like, whoa! But you have to watch. It's a train wreck. You know,
all right. For you, I will.
Yeah, you should almost play it because it's one of those things that you will just be just, they're just so clueless to what is actually happening. They're like, it's like when we all die and let's say there's an afterlife and, you know, but there is no Jesus. It's some, you know, black guy with an afro or something. And it's like that. It'd be like sitting there when they die, like, wait, where's Jesus? You know Jesus. Where's Santa? I mean, that's what kind of mentality, that's what kind of level of panic I feel that they're you know, emanating out of their little orifices. They're just sweaty and flabby and just...
I know.
And that Glenn Beck pastiness about them, they're just...
Yeah, Glenn Beck, who got given a dose of his own medicine from a truck driver.
The don't go in there. Oh, I can go in there. These are my people. I got my magic underwear on. I'll make it. I'll be fine. Freak. What a freak. And he's another one. He's always wrong. He's always been wrong. I don't think I've ever heard that guy say, maybe once, maybe. But I couldn't remember it. I mean, I just don't understand, you know, and I don't understand. I think people's BS meters the Bush administration has calibrated them. So I don't really feel like a lot of people buy it. I mean, especially a lot of people I talk to, you know, in my daily routines. And, you know, I don't hear anybody, you know, and we shouldn't even say it anymore because it really ain't fair, but it's a bad term, but it's kind of in the nomenclature. We're talking about drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
And I don't really feel like people, it's a bad term, it's really not something we should be saying anymore. But, you know, because those people were murdered. You know what I mean? I mean, let's break
right,
it down.
Sure,
those people
sure,
were
yeah.
got murdered. You know, they made it their kids. But anyway, you know, I mean, when we sit there and talk about that kind of stuff, what we are dealing with as a collective, you know, race, or species, not race, but species, human race, I guess. We're sitting there looking, you know, I don't feel people buying it, man. I just don't. I just don't feel people. I don't even feel so much that people are panicked. You see, I think that's the thing. Like, Friedman's like, oh, my God, I'm losing millions of dollars. You know, and, oh, why are you guys here? Why are you at the restaurant? You know, like, I guess.
But you, yeah, and you know what a foodie I am and what a food porn guy I am.
Absolutely.
I have so much respect for people who work in that industry because it's brutally hard work. It's hot, it's sweaty, and you know you can be sweating like a pig picking up a meal to deliver to a table in the kitchen, and you got to look fresh pressed as a daisy by the time you get to the table. You can't pull up at the table, you know, with drops of sweat falling on the foie gras. But you know,
you might want to.
You know, if the restaurants collapse, it's kind of like what Einstein is alleged to have said about the honeybees. You know, no honeybees, no us, 3 years tops. If the restaurants collapse, that means the economy's really gone, and here's this freak rooting on. And that's why, but you see, at the end, they're really hoping for that. There are people on the left and people on the extreme right who are each actively hoping for a full-on meltdown collapse. Because then, in the smoking rubble of what's left over, Albert, they hope to build their utopia. I have a hard time saying on the left because, you know, I consider myself to a certain... Hell, the conservatives consider me an outright commie!
I just want to see it broken. I do. I'm honest about it. I want to see it. It needs to. We have neck shackles. We're not free. We're all slaves. And that's why my point is. I don't want to see any kind of bastardization of any system that's gone on. And I don't know if I trust the human species enough to see any kind of system, but it deep down in the nugget of my little left-wing liberal commie heart, I do. I don't want to see these people anymore. I don't want to see these princes of dirt. I don't want to see it. I mean, I want to see the human race survive. I want to see us survive. I want to see us go out to the stars. I want to see us meet destiny and follow the prophecy that Bill Hicks laid before us, may peace be upon him. I want to explore peace, both inner and outer, together forever in peace. And I can't see it with Nike making shoes and, you know, sweatshop labor and, you know, Mercury and the little kids flashing shoes. Yeah, man, flashing shoes are great. They're so cute. And you can keep an eye on your kids, but there's Mercury in them. And I see the mentality that leads us down these paths as things that are not only sustainable. I don't see them as, I mean, Bob, I mean.
They're not real.
It's like taking a five-year mortgage. It's stupid. It's just stupid. What are you doing? Yeah, you know, what are you doing? Oh, it's over, but it's 6 months interest-free. Yeah, but the.
What happens in 6 months in a day?
The next 54 months are freaking, you know. 130% interest. What are you doing? You know, and it's compounding daily. You know, it's I just see us You know, and I just see us that, you know, I want to see the Thomas Friedmans broken. I want to see them crushed. I want to see them driven before me, and I want to hear the lamentations of the women. And there we go, just like that.
Yeah, I know. I know.
But at the same time, you know, I think they want to see it because they have all the wealth. They have all this wealth that they want to be able to consolidate, and they want to be able to own, and they want.
Well, for the right wing, there's money to be made in misery. There's everything. Right. Everything is always reduced to that lowest of the low, lowest common denominator. How can we make more? How can we not make more? How can we get more?
Yeah.
You know, that's why, you know, our pal Marty wrote in and said, did you go into how it came to be that NPR became so dependent upon grants from your friendly, not in your neighborhood corporation? He said, which you're likely to know better than me. Well, that's part and parcel of right-wingers out there screaming to the top of their bloody little lungs about how, public radio's liberal, and your tax dollars are financing liberal radio. That just makes me sick. And making it impossible to put to create independence inside that medium, which it once had, and making it instead go begging and sell out, frankly, to the really big bomb-making corporation of America.
Yeah.
And as a consequence of that, you know, you can't take money from these people and not be changed by it. You just can't do it.
Just like Chiquita Banana.
I mean, you know, you park a brand new Porsche, the Porsche Turbo in my yard, and I'm going to have a hard time saying anything bad about Porsche now, aren't I? There may not even be an official quid pro quo. Here, say nice things about us, have a car.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to have a hard time saying anything bad about them.
Yeah.
So, you know, that leaves me in the precarious, well, financially precarious position of relying on the listeners and a couple of... But, see, the thing is, for instance, like our relationship with Coal River Mountain Watch is a beautiful thing because... as long as I'm able to do it, I'll be talking about their good work, whether they're involved in the process or not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, you know, there's no ethical breach. On the other hand, if you're this doctor who got $2,500 on the same day that he said, "Hey, Mom, Dad, kids seeming a little down and out lately, give them some Lamictal."
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a major difference there.
There's a huge difference.
Huge difference. I mean, if you ethically, I don't have a problem. Bob, you can hawk anything that you ethically believe in. I mean, if you personally use it and find it to be beneficial and you think, oh, my goodness gracious, parrots are horrid, horrid animals, just horrid, and they live very, very long, quiet. Anyway, if you personally believe into something, and you use it, I don't have a problem with you hawking stuff. I really don't. That's just me. All right. If you find, hey, this is works for me, then use it. Okay.
That's been the model all along. You know, we talk about a lot of cool stuff that nobody's paying to have advertised, because I don't necessarily operate, and we on the horn don't operate that way. But you know, the very origins of this program lay in organized labor. It never would have gotten started had there not been a labor organization in West Virginia that was willing to try to sponsor a voice out there speaking from a pro-labor perspective. And that's of course, the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation. And they got us going through that first year on terrestrial radio in Beckley. And that was not a compromise. One, we told everybody several times a night who was behind the fact that the program existed, and two, I don't believe that there's anything better in America, and I include churches in that equation, for middle class folks, working folks, than organized labor. Bang, no conflict. And frankly, I don't feel any compunction against criticizing when they screw up, but I also praise when they do well. I'm so proud of the Boilermakers and the AFL-CIO getting together with the Environmental Defense Fund to start talking about some real green job solutions to reinvigorate this economy. You know, everybody else went, well, that's kind of surprising. No, it's not. The mother, the birth mother of progressive liberal activism is organized labor.
Yep. Oh, exactly. I mean, you're exactly right. And the only, and I just have to further just justify what I'm saying. So you just don't think I'm misanthrope or something like that. I just kind of got to say that, you know, I guess why I would like to see a crash, or I would like to see it broken, is, well, we need to make it broken anyway. I just think that's fundamentally fact. I mean, we can't see three corporations, which are really one corporation, own the media. We just can't see these kinds of things anymore. We can't have, you know, I hope one of the ideas that they don't go out, and because this is one of these things that just chills me to the bone, is they say, well, let's just unite all three car companies and make one big car company. You know that makes you sick, right? At least that makes me sick.
Well, I don't want to drive any Ladas or Trabants anytime soon. And those were one big car companies, so yeah, no thanks.
No, but what I think we need to see is I don't know if you've got a chance to catch it. I know you're very busy, but if you got your Netflix account, I seriously recommend, or if you just want to go on Nabolister, go look up the film Garbage Warrior.
I haven't seen it all the way through, but I have seen portions of it.
Oh, the end is just, it just says it all. Because it's when everybody loses, it's like Fight Club. You know, it's only when after we've lost everything that we're free to do anything. And I think that's to say we need to be able to do just about anything. We need to be able to do new ideas and, like, you know, if people, like that filthy, disgusting, degenerate pig, Thomas Friedman, who is, he's directly responsible for the 512 soldiers that have died since we hit 4,000, and maybe more now, in Iraq. You know, I'm just going to say he's responsible for at least that many deaths. I'm going to give those to him. We cannot let people like him, who hog the remote and hog the driver's wheel, we cannot let people like them steer us to the future. Because these people, they can't see what's past. They can't even see what's past their nose. And, you know, he's still stuck on his canapes and everything else, and his Kobe beef and everything else. I mean, this guy doesn't live in our world. He doesn't sit here and see reality for what it is.
Just one thin mint. It's wafer thin, sir. It's wafer thin. Yeah, I know.
He talks about this stuff coming. When, you know,
it's been here a while, and he doesn't live where it lives.
And he didn't want to hear it. He didn't want to hear it when people would say, like, you know, if we would say this, if I was to call up, okay, if I was to give a good old Thom a phone call and say, yeah, listen, Thom, we got to sit there and, you know, we got to watch all your, that's preposterous and, balderdash. And he would say all these kinds of things that people like him say. That's what he would do. He would say all this crap about how what did that Graham Cracker say? What did he talk about? We're delusional and we're in fantasy land. Yeah.
Whiners.
These kinds of, yes. What is this? What is this? What are they doing? So I think, honestly, I mean, these people are bankrupt. And, you know, like any good bankruptcy, we should be able to flush them and just get rid of these people. And that's why I would love to see, just to kind of, you know, I get sidetracked a lot, but just to kind of sit there and paint why I would like to see. I don't want to see us land real hard. I just want to see us land hard enough to shake these ticks off of us. I want to see us land hard enough that people wake up their eyes fully, turn off the goddamn Dancing with the Stars and all the other junk that doesn't matter to a single degree or one iota of anything in terms of our lives, and sit there and say, my God, I need solar panels on my roof, not now, right now. I need clean and this and this and sustainable fuel for my vehicle, not now, right now. We need this now, 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 not tomorrow, not in 10 days, now.
And see, maybe that's the difference between you and me, Albert.
Okay.
I think we can transition into something more meaningful, or I hope the heck we can. Because I don't think it's possible for it to come apart and not land hard, because we are way, way, way up in some very thin air. Because this entire economy is based on, except for the part of it that is based on human labor, is based on phony baloney.
Mm-hmm.
The money travels by electrons now.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't think anything about it. It has an ability to reach further than we know.
Mm-hmm.
So much of this is going to have to be based on real, honest to God leadership from the top, coupled with grassroots activism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, build the green economy, get it going.
Yes. I think we're certainly on the right foot on that. And this is why, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, I don't want to see us collapse. I want to see us.
But that's what I'm saying, Howard. I don't think there's. There's no such thing as a little bit pregnant, and there's no such thing as a little bit of a collapse.
Then if we were going to say, well, I think we're already collapsing, so that's really kind of neither here nor there. I think what it is, though, is I think we're actually in a lot better shape. Let's just be a little hopeful here. Let's put our little parachutes out, even if they're made out of cocktail napkins. Barack Obama is still going to be the president, and Barack Obama has enough savvy. And see, that's the one thing I just got to say, you know, he is now Hillary's boss. And if I was Hillary, I would have never taken this job. If I wasn't going to follow what he's going to say, I would have never taken that job, because she can literally wind up jobless at the, you know, a couple of pen strokes and she's gone.
No, but and, see, you know, but if that happens, she winds up making even more money at the Bland Corporation or whatever.
Oh, she'll go back to Walmart. I mean, and that's fine. But Walmart's doomed anyway. They're dinosaurs. I mean, they just are. And, you know, I mean, the only thing that Walmart can really, you know what's going to save Walmart? When we have solar panels on everything, and then they get to get a cut out of the amount of electricity that their stores generate because of the amount of square footage that they have on their roof. I'm sure that all Walmarts are at least, you know, they're all cookie cutter stores, and they're all what, 100,000 square feet and up.
Yeah, they're little. So, they are little C Catholic.
Yeah, exactly. You probably have the same kind of, I'd imagine in your local area that you would have the same size of the Walmart that we have in our little.
A super Walmart is a super Walmart is a super Walmart.
True, exactly. And, you know, when we're sitting here looking, I mean, I don't know about this. Hey, I got still good news, Bob. There is still good news in the heartland, buddy. We still have a mom-and-pop video store.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I go and every time I need a screw or a nut or a piece of wire or anything, we've still got a mom-and-pop the hardware store not 2 miles from me that appears to be doing just fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I do everything in my power to do business with them. I pay a little bit more. But that's okay, because I live in the same neighborhood with those folks. They may not even think the same way about me, but I think that way about them.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is what I think. I think we're going to see impact. I think the impact is going to be largely like the economy has always been. It's going to be illusionary. I mean, it's just because it impacts doesn't mean your house falls apart.
Yeah, but it's not illusionary for somebody who loses their pension because the fat cats in Detroit kept rolling out. We don't want those cafe fuel efficiency standards. What if we roll out a new Cadillac Escalade that gets 4 miles to the gallon, just like a tank, and we can paint it flag colors? Well, it won't stand, but it's what has stood.
No.
And it's what's taken, if there's a brink, it's what's taken us to this brink. And I understand what it is to be 65 years old and promises were made to you.
Mm-hmm.
And to have them look it up and go, well, you know, if we go bankrupt, we're just going to write you down as another liability and you can go die for all we care. Because that's the reality of bankrupting Ford or Chrysler or GM. Is telling a whole thousands upon thousands of UAW retirees to go die.
Well, I'll tell you what, I
This is why I believe the paradigm needs to shift. It needs to shift into a different, you know, like, all right, so, all right, and it can't work anyway. I mean, you know, like, and essentially, the way that this unfettered capitalism has been running, they don't want to pay this. They don't care about these people. They've served their purpose, and they don't want to pay. Bankruptcy or not, they'll do things to finagle it out, and you know, like, this is the thing. They'll just, what is this? This is a loan, okay? So, all right, fine. You're going to pay back your loan. You pay back your loan. But what happens in another 5 years?
No, see, did you see the Saturday Night Live thing?
No, I don't watch TV.
Okay, well, it showed up online, too. I don't watch TV either, except for when I get screwed around by cliffhanger episodes of the show I started watching the week before, bastards. And, you know, waiting for Tony Bourdain to come back and mount your football and basketball. That's it.
What's taking him so long?
I'm
waiting.
I know.
I waited for episodes online, and just they don't seem to be popping up.
But at any rate, they did a beautiful little skewering of a hearing with the big three guys in Congress. And said, the guy playing Barney Frank was doing a wonderful job. So, but you probably won't pay this money, this $25 billion. It's a loan, right? Oh, yeah, it's a loan. But you're not going to pay it back, are you? And the big three cover their microphones like they do in Congress, and they whisper among each other. And the guy from GM looks up and goes, oh, no. Now, we've prepared a chart here. You're going to give us $25 billion, and we're going to come back in June and ask for another $25 billion. And then if everything goes as we planned, in September we're going to ask for $75. And you can see here, if you follow the trends, by August of 2010, we're going to ask for $175 billion. But all you've got there is a list of the money you're going to ask for. Well, yeah. So, you know, it doesn't come with strings attached, Albert. It comes with great big anchor grade hemp ropes attached.
Oh, I like that. You know, I like that.
I knew you would.
And that's fine. I mean, I understand we got to do certain things that we're going to have to do, and I understand that it's never going to be what, you know, Albert wants it to be.
It ain't going to be what Bob wants it to be either.
Well, no.
You know, we bailed out Citibank today.
Again?
This is a new bailout. This is a nice, fresh one. It's still got the steam coming off of it. We bailed out Citibank, and just like the big three sitting there going, well, we ain't selling our jets. Just like that, Citibank says, well, no, we're not going to sell off any of, like, the naming rights for the new Mets stadium. Why? Well, what the hell? Yeah, we bailed out Citibank today. Charming, ain't it?
No, it's not charming.
No, I'm sick to death of it. But
We can't. Wait. Well, first of all, I mean, you see, like, these are the things that, you know, certain conspiracies would say that John F. Kennedy got killed regarding, you know, and same thing with Lincoln, and, you know, I think there's another one in there that you know, tried to fix the money, and they gave him a little heave-ho, but, you know, what the hell is our money backed with? With what? I mean, right now, I mean, we've been...
The full faith and credit of the United States government. That's it.
And what the hell is... The corporation of the United States government. All right, now what the hell is that?
That's all the bad paper that George Bush has hung on China.
Okay, and so what is that, then?
I mean, paper.
The thing is...
Ink.
Paper. It's not even paper.
It's economy. It's economics reduced to the status of religion. Okay? There's no gold standard. There's no silver standard. There's no cacao bean standard. There's no standard.
It's not. There's nothing. I mean, it's all about these illusionary, emotionally charged numbers, the emotional engine of the stock market. You know, Obama announces this guy from the Federal Reserve. Oh, everybody's happy.
Oh, wow. You know, we've had the biggest two-day soaring on the Dow Jones Industrial Average since 1987. 1987? Anybody remember 1987? I remember 1987.
That's freaking scary. I'd say worse words, but I'm not. That's scary. That's kind of the scary. I mean, you know, and I hope people just learn. I'll tell you what. There are some good things about this collapse that will happen, Bob. One of them is that I hope that we don't allow these things to become centralized anymore. We don't allow energy to become centralized. We don't allow energy production to become centralized. We do not allow banking institutions to become centralized or material manufacturing, anything to become centralized anymore. We need on the basic fact of the matter, I mean, a forest is not one tree. A forest is not five trees. A forest is billions of trees, and we need billions of trees with billions of root systems throughout the entire country, throughout the entire world. We need local, and those trees that I'm talking about metaphorically are communities, local economies. These are the things that are strong. These are the things that are worth fighting for. These are the things that are worth sowing, taking care of, and watering and nurturing. And because when you get an apple that's grown out of your own tree, it's never going to taste better. I mean, there's no way an apple from a store could taste better than that. And what we're looking at here is something that we need to start planting these seeds. We need to make these things local. We need to make these things decentralized. Okay, we can't sit there and allow Citibank. I personally happen to have a loan through Citibank, a card through Citibank. And it doesn't make me too nervous because right now it's just on payoff mode. You know, so we're just paying it off and any kind of credit that we have on it is not, you know, it's not even, you know, it's not even up for discussion. You talked to my wife one time. She's really good at compartmentalizing things. Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't exist. The money just doesn't exist.
But Albert, you know, so, look at Citibank. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a 20-year contract. Now, bear in mind, before any of this came out, they announced, oh, we could be laying off 50,000 people. Yeah, you know, something, 5,000. I can't remember what the number is. The numbers just all kind of together in my head after a while. But they're going to lay off beaucoup de human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got a 20-year contract to pay the New York Mets $400 million to name the team's new stadium City Field. Now, that was, of course, another one of these boondoggle stadiums that was built with taxpayer money.
Yeah.
But it's the Mets that are getting the naming rights.
Mm-hmm.
All right? $400 million over 20 years, so that's $20 million, I don't know. It's a lot of millions a year to call it City Field.
What's tens and minus seven? That's 20 billions. That's a lot of millions, billions, Frito.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I know. That's me.
But no, that's why I don't watch sports anymore. And I hope people start waking up to that fact. I mean, I don't like it. The Fed, like, wait, where are the Padres? Oh, Sunesco Field or, oh, Yahoo Stadium or what? What is this? I don't want to. What the hell is that? I mean, I grew up in the New York.
My beloved Mountaineers play in Milan Puskar Stadium at Mountaineer Field.
That sounds good to me. What is that? It sounds something local.
Well, Milan Puskar is a big donor to the university who runs something called Mylan Pharmaceuticals.
That sounds bad to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's where we need to get. We need to.
You know, it ought to be Ira Everett Rogers Stadium at Mountaineer Field if it's going to be. But that would require people to actually know the history of the real sports. But never mind. But AIG. You know, we bought into AIG, right?
They have a stadium.
Well, no. What they paid $125 million to put the AIG logo on the little shirts that Manchester United wins when it's wears when it's kicking a ball around the dirt or grass.
Oh goodness! You know,
and see, in both of these instances, you and I now own a stake in both companies. Meanwhile, you know that this wasn't orchestrated through the Obama transition team. This was another part of getting a few more pieces of the family silver into somebody else's coat pockets with the Bush administration on the way out the damn door.
Yeah.
So in this particular instance, the White House spokesman Tony Fratto said he hadn't heard about the City Field and hadn't heard about having AIG on Manchester United's little shirts. But he said, well, I mean, firms do that as a marketing item, and certainly marketing is important for any business, really. Yeah, because Citibank's this little startup that nobody knows about. Oh, Citi Field? You mean there's a bank called Citi? And they, oh, wow. Hey, Marge, we got to go look into that. Maybe we'll want to open a checking account.
I wasn't alive, but wasn't this how it was in the 20s? Wasn't it? Wasn't it? This is how it was.
I don't know if it's how it was in the 20s, but, you know, brought to you by Carl's Jr.
Yeah, well, it's exactly right. It's, you know, well, past is, you know. Well,
52,000 workers. 52,000 workers Citi is ditching. But they're going to keep paying the $400 million to the Mets.
Yeah. Well, hey, maybe good news is, 52, maybe 30, 40, not from that good news, but, you know, maybe not much of an impact if those people are in India in those call centers. You know, that's a good thing about outsourcing it.
No. They're not dummies, Albert. They'll get rid of the middle class salaries in the United States and the Western world. And they'll hire more in India. Not that I got anything against Indian folk, because I don't.
No, it's not. But that's also not the point of. I don't know. It's just like I just don't see that as a healthy immune system practice. And you know,
maybe that's because it's not.
No, micro is macro, and vice versa. And if we sit here, and that's why I'm telling you, this has got to, you know. Let India have their own banks. They got almost 1 billion people. They got plenty enough money and, you know, compounding interest. They could do enough with their own people in their own country to sit there and to employ their own people, right? Wouldn't you think? I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I don't understand how we can have the simple audacity to imagine that, you know, we should have our goods manufactured in these places like China. I've been trying to get my kids to watch this little show. I maybe I mentioned it before, like, because you know we don't watch TV, but I do like the internet, and they're all archived. I mean, little 5-minute segments of how it's made.
Yeah.
And you know, there are certain companies you could see, or, you know, you could see certain things here and there and there. And you know, I sit there and I think, man, you know, with all this machinery, we don't even need to hire many people to do any of this kind of stuff. You know, the more robotics, the more of these kinds of things, that these things can make these crazy little bits and bats. I mean, you know, like, so if we're going to get to a point where, why should we, I don't understand why we would mortgage out or just loan out the family jewels to places like China, to places like India, to places like, that kind of stuff to me just makes no sense. And then at the same time, well, we burn our reputation up. I mean, you know, and I hope that we can get to a point with the Barack Hussein Obama administration that we never have to worry about talking about our reputation. My God, I would just like to see our reputation patched up. You know, I don't want to see bread lines or soup lines or anything like that. You know, I don't want to get too bad for people because I do think that that here we are in the future. I think that every kind of thing, yeah, you know, things can happen much faster now than they have ever happened before. You know, I don't think that people, even if GM was all that stuff to hit rock bottom, I don't think we'd see, you know, hell, if we've got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars to just at the drop of a hat bail out these sons of, if we got that kind of money to do that, then man, we could sit there and make pension funds. Man, we could sit there and do this.
Why do you think this Citi thing is going down? Because every one of these that they do before January 20th makes it a little less likely that anybody on Obama's team can say, hey, boss, what do you say we start talking about a little universal single payer health care? Oh, God, I'd love to do that, but, you know, they stole all the money when they left.
What's that 6 month? Wasn't that, didn't Clinton do that about that 6 months before anybody switches, you know, the last president leaves? You know,
yeah, but those are regulations. These, you know, these are.
Oh, signing statements.
I know. Hey, Albert, I'm going to roll on, brother, but this has been a dandy.
Always. Great start to the week, Bob.
All right. Take care.
Talk to you later.
All right. Bye now. Our buddy Albert in Wisconsin. And lots of, hey, if there's not enough brought up in the last hour or so to fuel your ideas for the rest of the conversation, I don't know how we do it then. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, hello. How are you doing?
Hey, Matt, how are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm Doing all right. And, you know, as much as I turn on the news and I kind of shake my head and go, golly, how bad can one man screw things up before he's gone? I have to say, I am feeling good today because we have a status of forces agreement.
Ah, we've got a sofa.
We've got a sofa that is really a withdrawal agreement. I mean, it's right there in the first paragraph. It says this is an agreement to withdraw. That's all it is. And I think it's very interesting how for how many years now, you know, any timetable for withdrawal was, you know, giving in to terrorism, and now that there's a
you're
timetable
an American.
For withdrawal,
yeah.
It's suddenly it's victory.
Yeah, but
it's
see, Dana Perineal, you know, the White House spokeslady thing, she got called on it. She said, well, you know, those are aspirational.
Aspirational. I love that word. I'm going to use that word at work, you know. Yes, this is my aspiration. I have an aspirational, It's an aspirational job.
Well, yeah, you know, we want you to get X amount done in the workday. Hey, you didn't get X amount done. Well, those were just aspirational goals.
That's right, aspirational goals. There you go. I'm going to use that. But did you see the video of Bush with the world leaders not shaking his hand?
Yes, I did.
Video?
Yeah, I did. Okay. I mean, if he'd been walking along with a dead skunk in hand, it couldn't have been any more obvious. But then again, I think at this point he is the dead skunk.
Yeah, well, he's definitely a lame duck, but he's probably a dead skunk, too. There's a million dead animal analogies we can use because the whole thing just stinks. But I was inspired by that video to write a little piece of verse.
Oh, goody.
And I thought I would share it with your listeners. Here it is. Prince George was not a good man. And in his latter days, world leaders did not shake his hand, much to his amaze. At G20 meetings, when lining up on stage, they whispered of his ruined brand and did not offer up their hands. They left Prince George a one-man band, turning gray with age. Prince George was not a good man. And a lame old duck was he. On Oval Office afternoons, no one came round to see. And round about November, regulations in his queue, meant as gifts to backers past, had missed the deadline at the last. The end had come so very fast. The rule of law renewed. Prince George was not a good man, yet had his hopes and fears. The war he'd launched was endless now for years and years and years. But 2 months before Christmas, while Americans did shout, and happy songs of hope were sung, while worldwide bells ready to be rung, George stole away upstairs and hung a bill for fiscal bailing out. Prince George was not a good man. He liked his long vacations. Alone, he planned a new scheme out while venting his frustrations. He pushed his team to bargain and negotiate in true with Maliki and Talabani to divvy up that oil money and create from a process quite funny a legacy for W. Please fill my coffers and my new library. I think a tour of speaking would come in quite handy. I don't mind oil stock and secretive rendition, and I should like to leave my staff in permanent position. And oh, Father Christmas, for my legacy, bring me a big red Iraq war victory. Prince George was not a good man. Riding fiscal crisis out, he got him to his ranch again, there to pace and pout. Election night he lay there, praying hope would lose to fear. I think McCain's a surging now. Anxiety bedewed his brow. He'll win Ohio anyhow, just like I have for years. Forget about the coffers and forget about libraries. I'm sure a tour of speaking would bore me by my theory. I don't need oil stock, I don't want rendition, and I have put my loyal staff in permanent positions. But, oh, Father Christmas, if I'm to have a legacy, bring me a big red Iraq war victory. Prince George was not a good man. Next morning when the sun rose up to tell a waiting world Obama had it won, and people seized each other and laughed and danced with glee, for hope had many hearts endeared, change more potent than vile smears. Prince George said grimly, as I feared, nothing for my legacy. I did want coffers and a big library. I know a tour of speaking would have come in handy. I do love oil stock. I did love rendition. I haven't got a loyal staff in any old position,
And oh, if Father Christmas cared for my legacy, he would have brought Iraq war victory. Prince George stood by the window, and there did glumly meet the happy crowds of boys and girls celebrating in the street. A while he stood there watching and envying them still, when through the window, big and red, there hurtled by his royal head and bounced and fell upon the bed the Iraqi sofa bill. And oh, Father Christmas, you've ended our bereavement by ringing at last from out of George a status of forces agreement. The end.
And there we have Poetry Corner with Matt Osborne of osborneinc.com, O-S-B-O-R-N-E-I-N-K.com, and it will be there, correct?
Yes, it is up there.
Beautiful, beautiful. That, my God, that's just wonderful.
Thank you.
You need some music hung on that.
Well, my big thing today, my lead article is Saxby Chambliss, who to me is just the biggest sack of excrement alive right now.
For which reason? You know, there's a growing Saxby Chambliss sack of excrement list. Which excrement do you refer to, Matt?
Well, something about voting for studies of brain trauma in injured veterans, that really just rubs me the wrong way. You know, as a disabled veteran, and granted it's a mild disability, but I cannot understand how anybody who says that they loved America, who says that they're for the troops, could ever vote for this sack of excrement. He is absolutely, his voting record is 100% anti-veteran. The man is a total chicken hawk. He took 6 deferments, said, oh, my poor knee.
That's called football knee. Football knee to keep you out of Vietnam.
It kept him out of Vietnam. He managed to stay away from war, and then years later he defeats his opponent with this horrible ad. I mean, you know, on top of all the racism.
Yeah, morphing the guy with 3 limbs left in Vietnam into, yeah. And then said, yeah, he really is, he'd do it all over again. Those were fact-based ads.
Yeah, maybe an opposites day, an opposites world. I mean, it's just, Saxby Chambliss to me is, if you gave George Bush the state of Georgia instead of Texas, it would be Saxby Chambliss. I mean, he's Bush times 10, because he cannot stand to be called out. You've seen this video probably where he shoves the camera around.
Oh, yeah.
The imperial shirt.
It's time for you to turn that off.
Right. I mean, he cannot stand to be called on his bullshit at the least, not the least little bit. And just given that voting record on veterans, I don't see why this man is allowed to keep his citizenship, honestly.
I don't know. His Senate seat? You know, and this is an uphill battle. Jim Martin has a mighty, mighty tough row to hoe to oust this guy.
Yeah, he's only got a week left.
Yeah, and, you know, Al Gore's been down there. And, Lord, I hope... The thing is, though, news stories like Chambliss hosted golf event at Whites Only Country Club, you know, you and I hear that, Matt, and we go, ooh, what a bastard.
Yeah.
But there's a whole bunch of Georgia that hears, I'm going to vote for him. He understands states' rights.
Tell me what that means. What does states' rights mean? Am I right in thinking that states' rights means the rights?
Basically, states' rights is, it's the right wing's fallback position unless states' rights are in the way, like with the Florida recount. States' rights
or
right out the window with Florida.
Or medical marijuana or any liberal.
No. Yeah, no, see, states' rights, but states don't have the right to infringe upon our good, godly, upstanding, God-fearing, Jesus-loving culture of life. You know, so them pagan heathens in Oregon, they need to die in terrible pain and suffering, just like Jesus wants them to.
And those brain-damaged veterans.
Yeah, well.
They should just go beg on the street.
If they'd been any good at being soldiers, they wouldn't be brain damaged now, would they?
You know what it's time for? It's time for somebody to resurrect Hooverville. with the economic climate the way it is and all these disabled veterans, it's time for another Hooverville march on Washington, I think.
Well, it's, yeah, because the Hoovervilles are already beginning to happen. I've seen a couple of stories about them cropping up. Folks living in parking lots and the like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, really, Saxby Chambliss hosted a golf event. Did you see this story come out, Matt? This creepy business that this creepy old pasty-faced doughy dude does? He was given charge of something called the Majority Fund, the Republican Majority Fund PAC.
What in the world is that?
Well, it was a political action committee that was designed to help create and or maintain
the permanent majority.
The a Republican majority in both in his case in the Senate. He was given the keys to this account.
Mm-hmm.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution did a little digging. Damn liberal media. And they found that, and this is a quote, of the top 10 recipients of the majority fund's money since 2007, only one was a political organization.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, this guy has even, this shows that he really is he's a new Southerner. He skipped votes in the Senate so he could go and play some golf with that Tiger Woods.
That nice there dark skinned feller.
Yeah, right. He got busted trying to host a golf event. And see, all these things, they weren't for fundraising for Republican politicians. This 68% of the spending that went to golf and travel events and things like that, all of that was for lobbyists.
Well, see, all that this Republican majority crap ever was, just like George Bush getting the White House, the whole thing was a money-making scheme to begin with. They never saw government as anything more than a piggy bank for wealthy white men. That's all it ever was. When they talk about bankrupting, you know, the federal treasury, what are they really talking about? They're talking about enriching themselves.
They're talking about going and making a massive withdrawal to their own interest.
Yes. Absolutely. A massive withdrawal to their own interest. Well, man, I have to go, but I do have one more thing I want to run by you.
Yes, please.
From now on, I think that we should refer to all photo and video shoots of Sarah Palin as turkey shoots.
Oh, I like
that.
Every
photo op should be a turkey shoot. Remember, folks, use it early, use it often. Turkey shoot.
Absolutely, and we'll go over and review the poetry at osborneinc.com. Matt, good to hear from you, my brother.
You too. Take care.
Later now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
It was a turkey shoot. That's a beautiful thing. This rolling in, a telling detail coming from our buddy David in Tennessee, email-wise. W and Dimebag will not be going back to the ranch in Crawford. That resort was bought as a prop and a launching pad for elective office. Little Miss Dimebag has narrowed things down to a couple, chief among them, a nice gated item in a Tony section of Big D. And sadly, no more brush cutting videos. Darn it. Yeah, it just kind of breaks you up, doesn't it? Great poetry there from Matt Osborne. Again, Osborne Inc., Osborneink. .com. You enjoyed the recitation. Go and enjoy it as slowly as you wish. This email also in from our pal Georgia. Well, here we go. He's adopting Bush's attitudes, talking about Obama. I heard on Air America he's not rescinding the tax cuts that Bush put in place and will be in effect until 2011. True that. Sadly. Apparently he tap danced around an answer when asked point blank about it. So much for one promise down the freaking tubes. Can more be far behind? I said I was taking a we'll see attitude, but the veil is already being lifted, and I don't like what I'm seeing. He isn't even in the big chair yet, and we already got the first sucker punch. Damn, I had a feeling about this. Buckle your seatbelts, middle-class Americans. It's going to be a bumpy ride. God bless and protect America. Love to you all. And a hug for Agnes. Keep fighting, Georgia. Yeah, I saw that, too. Going to just let the tax cuts expire. And I'm of two minds on that. First of all, I'd like to see it just done. I'd like to see the Bush tax cuts repealed, not waited out. As opposed to just letting them expire. But in either instance, there will, I guess it's about not giving the right wing any ammunition with which to come back to life. You know what I mean? In terms of Obama, see, we told you he was another one of them tax-raising demon-crats. Because when they're allowed to expire, the right wing will stand up in Congress even when that's happening. He's raising your taxes, he's raising your taxes, he's raising your taxes. Nah, you lying sacks. He's letting them expire. But I understand completely, Georgia. You know, we just want to see... I think we want to see the right wing finally get slapped as hard as we've been slapped. And Lord knows there is no harm in that. Because, God, we've been slapped, haven't we? Frustrating. Frustrating in the extreme to see something like that. Let's go to the phone, see what's happening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
Going good.
All right. I've been on Friedman's case since, I think, 2002, 2003.
And hard not to while he was cheerleading, you know, Slaughter.
Well, I mean, just not that, but this, you know, what I call neoliberal, neoconservative economic system. You know,
yeah.
I knew where this is going. You're sitting there like, oh, this is going to collapse. It's going to collapse. It's going to hurt us. It's going to hurt us. And sure enough, it does. And then we got more idiocracy coming out of Friedman's mouth, who always proves to me that that people that go to the greatest of colleges aren't necessarily the most educated. Or the best educated, or the brightest in certain situations.
Well, look, how is the shine not off of Harvard and Yale?
I know. they got to be sitting there pulling their hair out. Like, you idiots, we're gonna have less credibility than Messiah College.
And that's what the Bush administration did for the last 8 years. They took the reputation of Harvard and Yale and reduced them to the equivalent of the Patrick Henry University and the Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell schools of law.
Yeah, there have kids growing up thinking the only thing they have to do to get into Harvard is renounce Satan and draw a pirate on a matchbook.
I know.
Or something like
draw
that.
Draw a parrot.
Sad.
Yeah. Yeah, because what was Regents University Law School where Monica Goodling came from, the 247th best law school in the country out of a list of 247?
Yeah, I think my local Cal College that I go to overranked them. And I'm sure they probably don't even have a third of the funding they do.
They've got enough money to pay people to do crazy things like argue that the executives are Unitarian, and when it says don't suspend habeas corpus in cases of war or insurrection, that actually means do it anytime you want to.
And
that costs a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, and also argue the talking snake theory of evolution.
Sure. That was the chatty copperhead, gossipy gabon. Right.
Yeah, and this crap from Friedman. Oh, yeah, don't go eat at restaurants. Oh, yeah, let's not support the only actual businessmen in this friggin' community of mine. You know, let's watch the little hard-working Vietnamese immigrant couple down the street from me in their little Vietnamese restaurant fold. Or the little smoking, the two smoking barbecue places we have near where I live, which are, you know.
Well, the peasants don't need to be eating there.
Yeah, we need to be eating mercury-based tuna out of our kitchens and, you know, and you were right about that. Three meals a day. I grew up listening to my grandparents' stories about the Depression, you know, the three meals, oatmeal, no meal, and skip a meal, and all that stuff. And all this is true. Every time I hear Friedman talk about this, I just want to grab him and just choke the little son of a bitch till his eyes pop out of his head.
And yet, but, you know, he's not going to go away because he's, you know, the New York Times says that his opinion is valuable.
Yeah, valuable, all right. Well, he's a billionaire scion because he married into a wealthy family. And I don't know about this, but I've heard rumors that he's like a relative of Milton Friedman.
I don't know. I remember looking at maybe the wiki on it and seeing that there's no relation between the two, but I'm not entirely certain.
You know, well, sometimes he sounds just like the guy. You know, the Earth is flat, the Friedman Unit, and all that stupid crap. I mean, if this guy was a sports analyst, he'd been fired. You know?
Yeah, he would.
Or at the very least.
Or if he was an odds maker.
Yeah, or treated as a comedic sidekick, you know, sort of like Terry Bradshaw. You know, every time Terry Bradshaw's IQ dropped 10 points, he makes $1 million, stuff like that. Basically, that's what we'd get from Tom Friedman. Every time he opens his mouth, his IQ drops 10 points and he makes $1 million. Or he makes a lot of people billions of dollars, I should say, and at our cost.
But again, it's, you know, it's not just him. You know, it's the rest of the, you know, Bart Kopp has this chart that he runs periodically that's a comparison between Chimpy the Chimp's successful prediction rating versus Fred Barnes.
Fred Barnes and a bunch of other conservatives.
Oh, and by the way, you know, we got to take just a moment and say, you know, a little bit, I guess, congratulations. It's always proud when you see somebody get out of an abusive relationship and stay away from it. And professional doormat Alan Colmes is breaking up with Sean Hannity.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. That was great. That was great. You know, maybe they'll take a pig spine out of a processing center and give it to Alan to use as his own. You know, it's sort of like...
Yeah, but my question, though, is who's going to be Sean Hannity's new doormat?
Well, maybe they ought to get one of those little kid punching things. You see those bozo clowns, and just put it there, and just it's about as useful. Or somebody proposed that it be Dick Morris, and then they'll just have the Two Dicks News Hour.
Very good. Didn't see that one coming. Very nice.
And
Dicks on TV.
Yeah, Dicks on TV. You know, it's owned by Rupert Murdoch, you know, and where's the sex?
Right.
You know, I mean, that's the truth. And now another thing that happened this weekend, which I'm sure made your heart just grow a few sizes, was seeing old Rich the Traitor Rodriguez get pummeled in Ohio Stadium.
It did. You know, I'm a really ungracious ass. because I dropped a note to ELO, our chat room moderator, Sue, a huge Buckeye fan, and note to Guy James, a huge Buckeye fan. I said, I'm just terribly ungracious because I was sitting there watching the game end, and I'm screaming, run it up! Run it up! You know, it's 42-7, and I'm screaming, run it up.
Yeah.
Pass, damn you, pass!
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My all-time favorite scene in that game was where that Austin Spittler kid just nailed that freshman that they had, McGuffey or whatever from Texas.
Yeah. Yeah, that kid's ancestors felt that lick.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I was like, ooh. I'm surprised he got off the field. I mean, that was a hell of a hit.
Well, it was. And, I don't know, last year awful things happened to the University of Alabama and their $4 million coach. But there was talent there.
Yeah.
And you knew that Nick Saban would do what he does. And it seems to have borne fruit this season. But Rich Rodriguez doesn't have any of that. And even if the guy goes out and gets every blue chip 5-star recruit in the country, they're still freshmen.
Yeah.
And that means, you know, frankly, if I'm a, and I don't mean to hurt any Michigan fans, I wouldn't be like this if they hadn't behaved so crappily in terms of Rodriguez and John Beilein and trying to get our women's soccer coach and our swimming coach. And I mean, you know, they treated WVU like some sort of a farm system. But anyway, there's no there. And so, you know, next year, if I'm a Michigan fan, I'm said, you know, I don't think I get to say maybe next year. I mean, there's no given for a bowl next year or the year after that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, he comes in there and he says, and you know, it's my way or the highway with these kids. And, you know, and these kids are not, when he got there, were spread kids, and they ended up leaving.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you how many times I've seen starting offensive linemen leave, starting, you know, a quarterback leaves. And now he's got two freshman quarterbacks, and he's talking about going out and getting another one. Now, wait a minute. This kid's been through all the knots with you. He's tried to learn the system at gunpoint with you. And not only that, he's sort of lost control of his team because in the first quarter, one of his defensive players just was almost ready to have a fist fight on the sidelines with one of the assistant coaches. And that is not a good sign in college football. It almost isn't a good sign in pro football, but in pro football, they're professionals and adults and yada, yada, yada. But in college football, when they're 18, 19 years old, you can't really have that happening.
No.
But, and now he's going to go out and get more freshmen. But they're freshmen. They're not going to come. They're not
right.
Be that damn great.
Yeah. They're going to be in the same place learning something the first time, learning a system the first time through, just like everybody did this year.
Yeah. Now, if they think they're going to get freshmen replaced, whatever these guys' names are, I can't remember what their names, but, you know, what do you do with these guys? Drop their scholarships? Good Lord. You know, have them transfer out? At the very least, I'd keep them because they're probably have some experience. At least they know what not to do.
And that's the thing. He won't be where he wants to be until he's got a group of fifth year seniors who have had 5 years in that system. And frankly, I don't think the faithful in Ann Arbor are going to give him 5 years to get it right. I mean, if there's no bowl game next year, year three looks real slim. I mean, my God, he lost to Toledo.
Yeah, lost to Toledo. That was pretty amazing. You know, I mean, Toledo's barely even a Division I A school.
And, I mean, you know, it's a MAC school, but, you know, there's Ball State in the MAC, and they're unbeaten.
Yeah. But the really funny thing is that was Toledo's only win.
I know.
That was the first win of the season.
Yeah,
I mean, that's pretty bad.
That took the goose egg off the W side of the column, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, there's no way that just happened. Oh, that is sad. Oh, but anyway.
And frankly, you know, if he's coaching in, you know, division four, you know, 4X, 3 years from now, it'll be fine by me.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was just a jerk.
Oh, yeah, just some NAIA hellhole out in the middle of nowhere.
And I, as far as I'm concerned, Michigan's going to be a while working the penance off of what they did.
Yep. Yep.
So, you know, so I've got Friday to worry about. You know, Ohio State's done. But we got two games left to not screw up. And I worry about every one of them. Because the guy that replaced him, the guy that replaced Rich Rodriguez was on his staff, but he's a strange bird, to say the least. Sits there, with time running off the clock in the fourth quarter in the final minutes, and he's, you know, saying, wow, are these Motorola headphones? I mean, I've seen it happen. And it makes you a little bit crazy. But, no, I'm sorry. You see what you do when you get me doing it? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, there was something you talked about last week that sort of got my attention. You've brought up in the past how your ancestors were deported from Britain because of their involvement in the Battle of Culloden, the Second Jacobite Rebellion.
Well, I know that, they weren't really deported. They were going to be beheaded.
That's usually what happened in British history. They if you were a supporter of something like that.
And so they got snuck out of British captivity.
Yeah, and usually the Brits sort of knew about it if you did do it. It usually, you know, it basically came down to, well, we got 500 people here to behead, and if 450 of you want to, you know, leave while I got my head turned and go to the colonies and never come back, I don't really give a damn.
Yeah.
But anyway, and you also were wondering about why Southerners are always wanting to join any stupid cause that the right wing comes up with.
Yeah, we'll jump.
Let's go blow up North Kazakhstan. Oh, yeah. Why? Because they're brown. Okay. Well, that's
play me some patriotic music now. All right, we're leaving.
Yeah. Yeah, they're sort of connected because I don't know if you know about the Stuarts, the monarchy, but the Stuarts were dabbling in absolute monarchies.
Yes.
Monarchism. They were going the same route I can't remember what France's last monarchs were called, but
the Bourbons.
Anyway, they were going that same route, and that was one of the reasons why they had the Glorious Revolution in 1641 in Britain. But when they had the Second Jacobite Rebellion, who were the people that filled up the ranks? Was it wealthy people? No, not really. It was poor Highlanders who were basically like paid a potato a day to go out and fight for an absolute monarch, basically against their own best interests. When it comes down to it, you know, was the absolutist going to be better, treat them any better? Oh, hell no, he's probably going to treat them worse. But that's also say that you also have that same thought process in the Civil War, the war between the states, whatever you want to call it. You had, you know,
poor
Southerners. I mean, real poor, you know, couldn't even afford shoes, fighting for the rights of some damn plantation owner that had like 250 slaves.
Yeah, but they were once again told, well, if you don't fight now, you're going to be up to your neck in Yankees. Well, they did fight, and they did, and they still wound up to their neck in Yankees.
Yeah, there's still that whole same thought process, you know, that they're always going to follow whatever the leader is. And no matter how psychotic he is, how abusive he is or she is to them, they're always going to follow them. They're always going to be, you know, observant of them or whatever you want to call it.
And yet they came over here and allied themselves with the power structure. I think you may be onto a thesis here.
It seems to be very generational. And now there's and I've caught myself in the past doing stuff like this, you know, because it's taught, it's learned through your parents, your grandparents, yada yada yada. And there's only one way for these guys to break this is they have to be sat down, they need to be told what they're doing, and they need to learn from their mistakes. They need to make conscious decisions to no longer make those same mistakes. I mean, this is a very wild thesis, I know, but...
No, I don't think it's that wild. I don't think it is at all. A lot of this makes perfectly good sense.
Yeah, I mean, you know, those poor destitute Highlanders, They were sent out to the Battle of Culloden against a very well-armed, well-trained British regiments with rusted-out flintlock pistols.
Oh, yeah, and before that, the successes that had been had were had because the main body of the British Army was off on the continent. And it was basically local militias that were making up the English defense at the time, if I understand correctly.
And
Did we lose you? Oh, I fear we did. Well, I hope you go back into range of service and get back with us. But there's an element of truth in that. You know, you can starve in peace or die fighting. And there is that's the whole better to reign in hell than serve in heaven kind of thing. By the way, this just in, sent along by our buddy Marty. Bush pardons 14 and commutes 2 prison sentences. Well, let's see who's on the hit parade here. We'll take a little break in a second. Let's see. Bush has commuted already, mind you. He's already committed the prison sentences of John Edward Fort of North Brunswick, New Jersey, and James Russell Harris of Detroit, Michigan. Both men were convicted of, cocaine offenses. Orion Lynn Vick of Whitehall, Arkansas, got himself a pardon. He was convicted of aiding and abetting the theft of government property. Down in Conroe, Texas, Daniel Phi Pugh III was convicted of illegal treatment, storage, and disposal of hazardous waste without a permit. Pardoned. Ronald Allen Moorhoff of Los Angeles was convicted of unlawful use of a telephone and a narcotics felony. Congratulations, you just got a pardon, Ronald. Paul Julian McCurdy of Sulphur, Oklahoma was sentenced for misapplication of bank funds. Not anymore. He's been pardoned. Geneva Yvonne Hogg of Jacksonville, Florida. She's an embezzler, but not anymore. She just got a Bush pardon. Oh, wait, there's cocaine again on the list. Andrew Foster Harley of Falls Church, Virginia. Wrongful use and distribution of marijuana and cocaine. Huh? I didn't know there was a right use of marijuana. Sure, cocaine? Let's see. False statements of the federal government. Milton Kirk Cordes of Rapid City, South Dakota, convicted of conspiracy to violate the Lacey Act, which prohibits importation into the country of wildlife taken in violation of conservation laws. And, you know, maybe this is the most emblematic one of the list so far. Leslie Owen Collier of Charleston, Missouri. Leslie was convicted for unauthorized use of a pesticide and violating the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act. There it is, in a very thin eggshell. The first Bush pardons on the way out the door. Heading the list, using pesticides known to kill bald and golden eagles. And with that thought, I can't help but introduce you to this. Traditional Republican values. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn.
And here is what I believe. I believe America is the greatest country on earth. I believe we need a return to family values. I believe every life is precious. I believe in a strong military to protect our borders and guard our fairways. I believe that we face a grave threat from religious extremism, but with God's help, we can crush them. I believe illegal immigrants make two things, tortillas and trouble. I believe it should be a hate crime to harm someone inside a gated community. I believe that gays serving in the military takes the dignity out of killing. I believe it should be illegal to ask questions during wartime or to talk about America without smiling. And finally, I believe it's time we banned death row pillows.
I approve this message. In America, Nate.
Governor Sarah Palin, a grateful nation wishes to thank you for serving the people of America with a servant's heart. We thank you for your passionate, hopeful, and articulate advocacy of common sense conservative values.
You're a symbol of hope for America.
We're thankful you taught your son about the greatness of America and the honor and valor of serving in our nation's armed forces.
Thank you, Sarah Palin.
We thank you for fighting for everyday working families and preserving the American dream.
Thank you for the grace and dignity you showed, even when some tried to smear and destroy you.
God bless you, Governor Palin.
You've inspired us, both young
and not so young.
Thank you, Sarah Palin.
At a time when so many politicians seem to have let us down, you've given us hope. And we just wanted to say,
thank you, Sarah Palin.
Our country deserves better. PAC is responsible for the content of this ad.
Thank you, Sarah Palin. Thank you. You made us see that a manipulated moron can be elevated to the nomination for the Republican Party's second highest position. Now that's a real ad. Our Country PAC has paid to run that ad all over Alaska, and they're trying to raise money from other dead from the neck up pig lickins to run it in the rest of the country. Thank you, Sarah Palin. Jesus. Breathtaking, isn't it? It is. Articulate? I mean, okay, I understand that the rest of it's just rank propaganda, but how do you, whether you're a paid spokes creep or a volunteer, how do you get to that line? An articulate, what? I mean, there are sentences still orbiting the earth that haven't hooked up subject to predicate yet that woman uttered in the, oh my God, articulate? Let's go to the phone, see what's shaking. Hey, welcome. Doggone it. You bailed. You'll have that. I wanted to work the Beatles theme this evening a little bit, just sort of to mark the 40th anniversary of the White Album, just like Vatican Radio did. Of course, I don't have to forgive John Lennon before playing the music. Wow, what a weird bunch. And I don't mean the Beatles. So, anyway, just to run down as we, about 29 minutes before the hour. Of course, if you've got something you want to get into the conversation, I welcome you to do so. Just to hit a couple of more high points out there. I mentioned that Sax Patramblis had hosted a golf event at a whites-only country club. Yeah. And they may still be whites only. This is the guy who says, of course, their people came out and voted. You know, those ones. Oof. If ever there was a person who needed to be removed from any idea of government, that's got to be him. But the times, they ain't a-changing in the Republican National Committee. There's a real creepy dude by the name of Caton Dawson. Caton Dawson. He's from South Carolina. Caton Dawson. He's a declared candidate for chairman of the Republican National Committee. And he could win. With credentials like this, I'd have to say he's got the inside track. He's been a member for he was a member for 12 years of a country club by the name of Forest Lake Country Club. He's been there for 80 years, Forest Lake Country Club has. And during those 80 years, they have never, never, never let one of those people sully our fine grounds. That's right. Forest Lake Country Club is, in fact, a whites-only country club. It astonishes. What? You know, that's one of those 2008 moments. Shake my head so hard, the daggum the cans about fall off. Is it astonishing to you that in America there are still whites-only anythings? Water fountains, lunch counters, country clubs? Whites only?
Well, it was a historical election as America elected its first African-American president.
And the president-to-be of the United States is not welcome at Forest Lake Country Club. If you are the president of the United States and your skin color is wrong, by their standards, you can't set foot, well, I mean, I guess you could if you were the help, but you can't have membership in the Forest Lake Country Club. Can you imagine going to lunch there or dinner? How could... Who... I remember being taken on the job interview many, many years ago to one of those city clubs. You know, it'll have some name associated with the town, and it's usually in the top of some building. And part of the interview process is going to lunch. You know, find out if you know, find out if you're going to pick your nose with the shrimp fork or something. Or if you pick it up and go, what the hell is this? They must be serving some tiny food. And I was taken to this club of which the organization was a member. And I was ushered into the room by an African-American man wearing starched white livery. Another African-American man wearing starched white livery and black trousers took my dinner order. And by about the salad course, I didn't want to work for these people because it was no big deal. Well, of course. And I can't imagine what has to be absolutely damn sideways inside your little skull for you to say, let's go down to our white only country club, Mafi, and get a bit of dinner. I love the way they make that spoon bread. Or perhaps some shrimp and grits for Sunday brunch. How can you live inside your own skin belonging to something like that? But this guy, Caton Dawson, was a member for 12 years of Forest Lake Country Club. And he wants to be the head of the Pig Lickin' National Committee, and I think he should. He says he's been working since August to change the club's admission practices. He didn't know he was at a whites-only club them 12 years till he readed about it in the newspaper. And then he suddenly looked around and says, how about that? Everybody in here sitting here eating dinner is white. And it's because I just figured it was because nobody else wanted to join. And he's claiming now that he's leading the fight to change the admission practices at Forest Lake Country Club, and that he wrote this letter. But the problem is he only wrote the letter after he got busted for it, for his membership in the newspaper. 2008, nearing the end of the first decade of the 21st century, and not just in South Carolina, but in places all over the South, there are still institutions that are labeled whites only. Enough. I don't know about you, but from my standpoint, enough. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Hey, Brother Luke, what's up?
Oh, I tell you what, it's just, I was sitting this weekend watching the Republican convention that they call the Sunday shows, and sitting back and watching. You know, for some strange reason, you know, I sent you that attachment to one of the articles I sent.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't it seem interesting to know after 2004 that all we kept hearing was, oh, liberalism is dead. You know, we've had two Republican elections.
And we're going to have a permanent Republican majority.
And isn't it amazing to know how now, after two elections where Republicans have got their butts kicked, we don't hear no stories about the death of conservatism, or the even just
no.
Death
we
of
get
the
to, we yeah, we get told that even though conservatism got its butt kicked, it's still a center-right country.
And you're sitting there going, well, somebody please challenge them and say, what do you mean center-right?
You know, what's center-right about starting a war with a country that didn't do you any, yeah.
But, you know, it's just amazing. Like I said, I'm just curious. I wrote the letter just today that they had the chat at the Washington Post. I sent my letter in, of course. Like I say, my letter didn't get picked. But my question was, why are we still seeing people, anybody showing up for the next 2 to 4 years? We shouldn't see a person show up from the Heritage Foundation or the Federalist Society. I'm curious, where's anybody from the Center for CAP, from American Progress?
I know.
Somebody from ISP. Where's I mean, why doesn't everybody have Noam Chomsky on? Dear Lord. Noam should be, you know.
I know, but no, it ain't good. No, it's gonna be the Heritage Foundation creeps and Competitive Enterprise Institute and American Enterprise Institute, all these the right wing deregulation creeps think tanks, and it's gonna be the continue to be Thomas Friedman, and Albert mentioned it earlier in the show, screaming matches now between Neil Cavuto and Ben Stein.
Oh, you were talking a minute ago about Thomas Friedman. Now, always remember, this is just give 6 more months, Thomas Friedman. Remember now, for the first 3-4 years.
Oh, yeah, the Friedman. Yeah, the Friedman unit. Sure.
Yeah. 6 more months. Just 6 more months. You know, it's like, you know, he comes to a party late and then claims he discovered it. You know, he's always been good at that. He shows up after the work's been done and says, oh, I discovered that. You know. It's like to say now he's wanting to jump on the environmental bandwagon. It's sort of like, well, gee, Thomas, where were you 10 years ago? Let's see what some of the things you wrote about Al Gore at the time. Let's see what you said. You know, what did you call him when he was saying these things? I bet 10-1 it wasn't real.
He was an alarmist.
Yeah, crazy man. Oh yeah.
Serial liar, pathological liar, incapable of telling the truth, inventor of things beside the internet.
If I say, you and I both know this, the place that if you ever really want to go, I still say that one of the best sites to read the media of their own pedigree is go to the Daily Howler. Because Bob Summersby keeps a good
yeah,
every day.
He is very good at pointing out the media's shortcomings, and of course apparently so is what's his name, Mark Halperin.
Oh God! Oh, I saw the thing was he.
It was disgusting.
About McCain's people being mistreated by the Obama bias. I'm sitting there going, well, Mr. Halperin, have you seen this thing called Fox News?
No.
Just for a thought.
La, 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 la. No.
Yeah.
No, because what you get, you know, and I remember having the folks on, you know, Paul Waldman was one of them. They did, you know, I can't overestimate the value of what folks like Waldman did in terms of pointing out the ice cream and cookies treatment that McCain was getting.
Oh, yeah.
And it was because of the effort to call out the for-profit media that maybe Obama started getting a fair shake in the media, but that doesn't, no. What this Halperin creep is talking about, Luke, is the fact that that the media wasn't completely biased against Obama.
Well, they're like, well, why y'all, they were just covering negative stories on McCain. It's like, I'm sorry, but when McCain was in full attack mode, what are they supposed to talk about? His dog? You know, how he treats the animals? What? I mean, he's sitting out there putting out attack ad after attack ad. It's like, well, you think I should ignore that, right? Just only do the good news.
I know. I know, exactly.
But, you know, it's just amazing to me watching this. It's like, you know, like we've been saying, you know, some of the guests that they're getting now on these Sunday shows, you know, we ought to be every weekend, or on Monday, I guess, we all ought to be writing to them going, you know, where are the liberals? I'm sorry, these are the people who won. Why aren't you having them on? What's this idea of, well, we'll just put the losers on. Well, that wasn't your idea 4 years ago.
Well, no. Now they're the loyal opposition, Luke.
Yeah, but 4 years ago, we were weren't the loyal opposition back then, apparently. Apparently, we were something not even to be talked about. Sorry, we have to carry the winners. we can only carry the winners 4 years ago. Now we have to carry the losers.
Yeah.
You know,
because, because now we're being journalistically balanced.
You know, it's one of those things, I always love it, when somebody goes on there, oh, we all complain about MSNBC. It's like, well, Gina, where were you 8 years ago when it was some fellow named Donahue getting kicked off the air? You know, when he just dared to say the honest things. I mean, you really want somebody on sometimes, have some fellow named Jeff Cohen on who will tell you the stories. You know, where he said the one time they wanted to have Noam Chomsky on, but he said according to NBC's rules, he'd had 25 conservatives on to balance him. You know, he said every time they had a liberal on, they demanded he have at least two and sometimes three conservatives for the opposition. He said I couldn't have Noam Chomsky on because I couldn't figure out any way to get 25 conservatives on the stage at once.
I know, it makes you did. Well, and look, you've seen this latest flap come up about Chris Wallace.
No, which one's this?
Oh, now he's and we, you know, I touched on some of this talking with Albert too. Chris Wallace is now openly repeating talking points from Fox advertisers as lead-ins to advertisements that run on Fox.
Well, you know, it's like the thing that it's like that dirty little secret that no one apparently wants to talk about too much in the mainstream media is this thing they call Fox Business Network.
Oh, God.
Which apparently, like, say,
is that thing still there?
Well, I was going to say, you know, the multi-color bar when the stations are off the air for service gets better ratings. You know.
Honest to God, I didn't even know it still existed. Wallace today, you know, the latest frenzy that they're trying to work up is the Employee Free Choice Act.
Oh, how dare they?
You know, the card check. And so, lo and behold, Chris Wallace was doing it on what Olbermann calls fixed news. And then, lo and behold, after delivering a Jeremy ad against the Employee Free Choice Act card check agreement, what's wrong with the secret ballot? Oh, they're taking the secret ballot away from American workers. And then, boom, cut to break, and there it is, an ad from Americans for Job Security.
Oh, isn't that nice of them? Put a nice little phony name to it, Job Security, which means we want a job where we can throw you off at any time for any reason we make up.
Yeah, we're American the business owners who want to be secure in our right to threaten you with your job if you ever dare to dream of joining a union.
I would someday love to see one of the mainstream stations, and they won't do it, of course. I would like to see a nice little expose on something called the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Oh, Lord.
Who puts up a bunch of this stuff, you know, under...
You'd have to rate that NC-17. It's dadgum dirty.
Oh. You know, it'd be amazing to see what all they've supported over the years. You go, Chamber of Commerce, It's like, these guys ought to be registers as prisoners.
Yeah, no kidding.
But,
yeah, whether it's Halperin or Chris Wallace...
I'm just waiting to see. Maybe he's going to be the new balance for Hannity. You know, he seems about the right kind.
Oh, but isn't his ego too monstrous to share those two egos would be like there'd be some sort of rift in the space-time continuum and just suck everything into it with monstrous egos that size sitting in chairs next to each other.
Maybe they got rid of Alan because I saw recently wasn't E.D. Hill was getting let go by Fox.
E.D. Hill did get terrorist fist jabbed out of her job, but the thing is, Combs, while he's leaving, that life support system for a haircut side, he's going to continue on with developing a weekend show for Fox, and there's no mention of whether or not they're going to give him his own standalone liberal program, but he's still supposedly with Fox.
I was going to say, does anybody bring you any memory of the name Alan Keyes? It's like, God, let's see if you can get that 0.00 rating.
But I don't.
Everybody said he was a real success with that 0.00 rating.
I don't know how Alan will do with his own program, you know, given as how he suffers from one of the most profound cases of Stockholm syndrome ever to be broadcast on television.
You did see who is getting a show, but we probably will not be able to see it here in the U.S.
Who's that?
Christine Amanpour.
Oh, really?
On CNN International.
Sure, of course, yeah.
But I'm glad she's getting it. But the thing is, we don't get CNN International in the U.S.
No, we don't, and there's a reason for that. You know, the CNN you see in a hotel room in Europe, I'm told, is vastly different from the CNN that you see in your own living room.
Oh, yeah. It's like, say, if I had my druthers, it'd be, give me CNN International and throw headline news out the window.
Under the bus. And if we could get Glenn Beck under the bus before he bought, oh my God, there you go.
That's who it is.
There you go.
Oh, now again.
Now I don't know if they're sitting next to Hannity, but they had to make ideological room for time space for Glenn Beck and his magic underwear.
What do you bet Glenn Beck will be listed as a libertarian? That's the way they'll try to sell him.
Independent.
Yeah.
Independent. They will, I bet you. Okay, let's see. This is the 24th of November, 8:51 Eastern time.
His contract will
but,
down with the CNN.
You say libertarian, I say independent.
Yeah. Or something somewhere in there. They'll figure some name to give to him, you know what I mean? Where they won't say conservative, of course. No.
No.
It'd be something when you're sitting there.
Well, you know, it's an interesting piece of broadcast journalist or broadcast gymnastics to watch Fox try to run away from itself. I've seen foxes chase their own tails. I've never seen foxes run from their own tails.
Well, you know how it is. It's like I say, I'm still just waiting. I'm hoping that like I say, the top heaviness of eventually will break them down. Because like I say, most people don't realize, you know, when you listen to people talk, most people don't realize, you know, that O'Reilly's losing his radio job, but most people don't realize the fact is he stinks on radio. His numbers are lousy.
Yeah.
For a conservative talker, he's lousy.
He is at best, what, third tier?
Yeah. I mean, because most people don't realize his numbers on the radio are just abysmal. I mean, you know, it's like say most of the liberal commentators you could think of would wipe the floor with him. You know, it's like say his ego and him just can't stand it. Oh, it's like say TV's the only thing that can hold him right now.
Yeah.
I'm still just waiting, you know, that I'm hoping, you know, Franken wins because I really do want to see him try to run for an office because you know somewhere in the back of his mind he's got that thought.
Oh, that would
be
precious.
Can make it, I can too.
Yeah, because at this point, it's the relationship between Kirk and Khan. Khan! And on the other side, he tasks me.
The more I learn about them, I'm really starting to get on Khan's side. I really am.
Well, see, that's the thing. That's kind of what I was implying. Hey, Luke, good to hear from you, brother.
You have a good evening.
we'll talk later. Bye now. And glad to know we were able to get by our nightly required Star Trek reference. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin. What's happening, brother?
Yeah, about those golf clubs, frankly, they're rather beneath me.
They really are.
And, you know.
Well, I think of something like Forest Lake Golf Club. And, of course, my mind being what it is, Kevin, I immediately flash over to that wonderful scene in Caddyshack.
Oh yeah.
when Rodney Dangerfield picks up the hat and says, you buy the hat, do you get a free bowl of soup? Oh, but it looks good on you, Judge. That and hey, honey, you want to make $20 the hard way? Oh, I bet you were a looker back before electricity. Those are the people that are. You know, there's not. It's a wonderful, wonderful movie, but it is a very close parody of those organizations.
Oh yeah.
And so beneath you, yeah, exactly. But even so, Kevin, go ahead.
Yeah, and that was part of the problem when you know I was living outside of New York. I often ran into places like those, and you know. I made it plain that you are beneath me, and that's what scared a lot of the establishment in Florida, at least where I was living in Florida, and when I started working out in the Midwest.
And you know, well, you gotta ask. I mean, when an all white country club has something that needs fixing, do they go looking for an all white work staff, or is it, you know, it's okay if they come in to do the work?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and it's like, it's I don't know, it's just.
I mean, if you can't be in the dining room or on the golf course with anybody but white folks, how could you possibly stand having persons of color making your stuff go?
Yeah.
And, yeah. But, you know, I don't know if it would be necessary to legislate it away or sue it away. But even though it's beneath you.
Ignore them. Pretend, you know, let them live in their isolated little world, you know. I would encourage black people not to work there. But anybody of color not to work there. Let them hire.
Or anybody. Hey, let's extend that. Anyone of color or any pink people of conscience.
Exactly. Let them hire their own car.
Yeah. Let them find somebody to come and. But they can't. Oh dear, I've dropped my shrimp fork and I can't find it in the plaid carpeting.
Also, you know when it was worth it to watch Fox News? I watched Fox News for the first time ever. On election night,
yeah.
Oh man, when Barack won Ohio, you should have seen them all turn a beautiful shade of gray.
First time in your life you've really had a real appreciation for gray in skin.
Yes. It is like the most beautiful shade of gray I ever saw, man. It was like, you should have seen them all there. This just in, Barack won Ohio.
I know, Bill Maher did a lovely little parody of it. The camera view over from the top of the, you know, looking down on the newsroom, and they announced it, and all the little heads just exploded in little bloody, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That was gorgeous. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and it's like as the night progressed and he started getting the onslaught of states from the West Coast and all, it was like, it just seemed like they were getting more and more smashed. They probably had flask of God knows what.
at that point in time, Kevin, they were into the straight grain alcohol.
Yeah. Yeah, man. That was the one night I decided to watch Fox.
It was, yeah, it had to be a beautiful thing. Of course, we were on the air here, so I couldn't really watch.
I was speaking with you guys.
Yeah, I know.
Fox.
Yeah, but, I remember.
Yeah, but that was the one night I'll probably ever watch Fox. Hopefully it'll be a repeat in 4 years from now.
That's what I'm looking for. Hey, Kevin, we got a roll, brother, but good to hear from you.
Okay.
All right, take care.
Always. If I don't talk to you, happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, you too. You too.
God bless.
All right, bye now.
Okay, bye.
Well, see, I wish we'd had a little more time. Thanksgiving in Brooklyn. Maybe Kevin can. Everybody, check back in. Let's talk. You know, what's the feast going to be when we fire up the show again tomorrow night? Okay. And thanks to all of you for calling in, for your thoughts, your conversation. Thanks for your participation in the chat room via email. The message boards are open there at headonradionetwork.com again. And hey, thanks to those of you who ran out and bought stuff at the Head On Radio Network Horn Store at cafepress.com. I hope you like your stuff and tell your friends and neighbors. That was really neat to find out. We had a little purchasing flurry that went on after I mentioned it last week, and we're gonna be adding more stuff too. So wander by if you haven't, and if you are not already a supporter, a contributor to keeping conversation radio going, it would be great if. This was the time that you decided to be. Thanks to John Fox, Peter Godbold. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, whiterosesociety.org.